Hello, 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 and welcome to the Rolling Ball, the Leicester Tigers fans podcast, half of whom is fighting off unfair allegations that I'm now officially known as the curse for Leicester Tigers, and I'm now being banned from not only games in the West Country, but games at Welford Road as well, where I actually genuinely have a good record, although now I come to think about it, not particularly great watching Quinns, actually. Anyway, Elliot, you were there with me.
Hello.
What's your record at this season so far?
It's probably as shit as yours. Well, no, I don't think anyone's
no,
record.
No, I've thought about this. It's worse.
I have a 100% losing record, as do you. So it's exactly the same as...
Yeah. You've seen four games live.
Have I? I've only seen three.
No, you went to Saracens.
Yeah.
And then Bristol, unfortunately. I know we try and delete that. And then Queens.
Yeah, yeah, so, three.
Yeah, then didn't you go to one of the other ones as well?
No, I was in Marrakesh for sale, and then I was in London for the Bath game, not getting pissed on. So I have the same record as and to be fair, the way it's going this year, I have the same record as most of the players. So quite frankly, the pinning records on me is not appropriate. You, however, have a stronger, the prosecution has a stronger case against yourself. However, it is unfair to pin it all on you.
Bullshit. Only in the West Country I'll fully accept the blame for all defeats from now on at Bristol or Bath. Not Gloucester. I've got an excellent record at Gloucester. In fact, actually, there should be a whip round to get me to the Gloucester game. Remember that game where we like scored 21 unanswered points in the last 15 minutes to win? I think it was the game Shazam Harrison likes to regale us with. We all enjoy listening to it as well, actually. It was a heck of a game. But I was at that one with my future father-in-law. Well, obviously, he's my current father-in-law. But at the time, it was a week before we got married, and he's a diehard Gloucester fan. Travelled all the way over from Australia to watch that. It was deeply satisfying.
That is pretty good. That is pretty good.
Did test the relationship quite early doors. But, mate, look, aside from Tigers, we were there. It was quite a brief meeting for us this time. It was a quick sort of pint and a fist bump in the Crumbie Lounge, and then onto the terrace with our respective families.
Yeah, we had enough time just to laugh at Spurs along the way, which is always enjoyable. But no, I was probably
City lost 1-0 to Middlesbrough. I'm always careful about laughing at Spurs when that's.
No, I think you should always have time to laugh at Spurs because Spurs is Spurs, and that's always good fun. However, it was, as you've mentioned, it was a bad day for the sporting capital with City and Tigers going down. So meeting you even briefly was a highlight of my Saturday. So I'll leave it up to you whether that's which shows you just the level of my Saturday. But no, it was good. It was good. Weekend was ruined by respective sporting teams, but salvaged by a fairly chilled out Sunday. How about your good self?
It was nice seeing the family. Obviously, getting to go on the terrace with my old man is always good fun. I think it feels like he's passed the baton of yelling onto myself and my brother now. He's actually become slightly more sedate. He's a bit, although when he does sort of like speak, he still booms. He's not calling the lies, or flag waggers, as he called them. He's not calling the, I think my favourite one was when he criticised the flag waggers running and he just screamed, "Run properly, linesman," as he ran past because he was sort of waddling, which I always thought was quite a damning insult, you know, having your running technique criticised on the sidelines. So he sort of passed that baton to my brother and I. We had a lot of good fun. It was a good game as well, actually, to be honest. If you take away the crushing disappointment of the loss, it was actually a really good game, end-to-end, lead change, hands, a lot of time. There was a lot of really good rugby on display. We'll come to that in a minute. And, you know, on a rewatch, like I said, which I did on Sunday night after an absolute pig of a drive home, I've got to say, I'm a bit more positive.
Yeah, both of us watched the game back on Sundays because we're nerds. And we don't like talking to our wives. So,
I'm not putting that out publicly, but yeah, exactly. I've got an idea for a new feature, by the way, just because I want to get my entry in now. I want obscure Tigers spotted, particularly former players. Like, you know, anyone who's seen like a former Tiger doing anything that's slightly weird. Like, I once worked in the Jet Garage in Houghton, or it used to be the Jet Garage. And once, I think we had Darren Morris coming in, and he literally bought, like, he grabbed an entire sort of like fistful of chocolate bars and put them down on the counter. And perhaps he thought maybe I didn't like rugby because I'd straightened hair at that point, which I'm slightly ashamed about. I'm not ashamed about it. But I sort of looked at him and then he very hurriedly said, oh, they're not for me. Of course they're not, Darren. I thought that was a good one. But I went to a Ben Folds gig in, but I don't know if you can call Ben Folds gig sort of a pianist pop rock sort of thing, but I went to see a gig in Bath and I saw Dan Hipkiss lurking around.
Big Bad Danny.
Big Bad Danny, yeah, exactly. The hero of the 2010 Premiership final. And it was my anniversary present to my wife, who's a big Ben Folds fan. And we were sort of in the bar area and she was talking to me. She was like, are you even listening? And I said, no, that's Dan Hipkiss. And she was like, who? And I sort of explained it. She was like, oh God, all right, yeah. And I was like, do you think I should go over? And I was like, she's like, no, he's talking to some sort of like very pretty person. You shouldn't be going over and speaking to them and interrupting. It just made me realise what we need is a rolling more business card, just to basically like walk by, pop that in his pocket, give him a wink and walk off.
That can be arranged.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Have you ever had a odd Tigers spotted experience?
I can't think of one as it comes to mind, but I did have Roger Utley on a same flight to Mallorca once.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's niche.
It is niche. That is niche. But that's exactly the kind of thing we're looking for. So if you've got an odd tiger spotted, get in touch, because I love that kind of shit. So get in touch with us. Really enjoy that. Right. This podcast, we're obviously going to be talking about the Quins game. It's a crushing disappointment, but Elliot and I are both in agreement. We think that there was quite a lot there, which hopefully we can build on. But it does mean that this next weekend, Derby Day against Saints, is absolutely mahoosive. And to help us preview that, we've got our old friend, Bobby Bridge, who used to be covering Wasps. And now, just to make sure that he rounds off and covers all of our enemies, he's now covering Northampton. But great to see him back in the game. I don't know if that's the lingo that they use. Great writer and really, really knowledgeable as well. So it's going to be really good to have Bobby on. And I think he's expecting a baby, isn't he?
Well, he's not, but his wife is. He's, I know he plays in the front row, but...
he's got a food baby, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, so have I. I mean, guilty of that one, to be fair. But, you know, he is... El Numero Do is on the way. So he's going to come join a club like you.
Ah, merci beaucoup, Rodney. Very nice. We're also going to be very lucky to be joined by one of Tiger's bright young things, Archie Vaines, on the podcast later. We'll be listening to him about his growth at Tigers. We're probably going to ask him some questions about the line-out woes and put him on the spot there, see what he has to say. But fantastic young man. Can't wait to speak to him. And you'll be pleased to hear that we completely forgot to do the Nails 15 Scrum Half vote again. We're really dropping the ball on this, so you don't have to listen out for that. But we will put something out online this week for you to do a vote on. Now, going on to the fantasy rugby world, going back to the World Cup, which seems fucking ages ago now. But again, the winner was Shane Speedy, 88. Shane, if you're listening, you've got a day, basically, to get in touch with us. We've put your name out three times, maybe just like hearing your name. But you've got a chance to win a magnum of wine, courtesy of Charnwood Vintners. And unfortunately, you haven't got a touch. So if you don't get in touch, I would say by Wednesday lunchtime, it's going to the second place, who sort of absolutely walked into second place as well, was Ollie Holt. So Ollie, if you're listening, sort of fingers on the ready, go and send us a message on Twitter or send us an email or get in touch on Facebook and just send us your details and we'll pass them on to Charnwood Vintners and they can arrange to send you a nice big magnum of wine. Now, I suppose I've probably also got to talk about the fucking Premiership fantasy rugby as well, haven't I?
I mean, I did some structural renovations to it on Thursday last week because I realised my start was unacceptable completely and made some tinkering around and jumped up 20 places in the in our league. So I've done half. It doesn't make the first few weeks forgivable, but I've had an improvement. So I did have a good week. So it did mean having to be... I felt dirty because I had Freeman and Dingwall in my back line. Of course, both scored tries on Sunday, which is a horrific feeling because I had obviously points to be won. Mm. I also had Dom Brandt at eight, which is also sickening. Because
yeah, but I mean, like, let's be honest, all of them are quite class players, so they're all very sensible decisions. And Dom Brandt as well, was excellent against us. Annoyingly, we'll get on to that. I somehow went up also around 20 places, and I, for the second week running, forgot to make any transfers. So I think that there's no correlation between putting in any effort and succeeding. So the person in the lead, again, there's a magnum of wine to be won, courtesy of Charmwood Vintners. Thank you very much, guys. We've got Mauling Marauders, who is top of the league with 875 points, closely followed by Mini Edwards on 869.5 points. Wow, that's close. 5 points, isn't it? Long way to go yet, but well done, Mauling Marauders. You're currently in charge. I think that also means that the chap who's an Exeter fan, who obviously because Exeter lost and didn't do very well, now he started sliding down the league, which is what we want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't like intruders coming into our league and winning. All are welcome. We should make that clear. But
you can't say that after what you've just said. But
there is no hypocrisy in what I've just said. All are welcome. But we don't want you to win.
All are welcome, but get out. Yeah, like it. Good.
No, just don't win. I mean, that's just rude.
Yeah, okay. If you want to get in touch with us, please do so. Our email address is therollingmall@outlook.com. Our Twitter handle is rollingmallpod. And our Facebook group is The Rolling Mall. And as always, please, please take a couple of seconds to leave a review or rating on Apple or Spotify. Before we crack on, a quick thank you to our sponsors, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters, who are helping us put this all together. St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are a small team of coffee professionals, proudly born and bred in Leicester. Family owned and operated, they've been dedicated to perfecting the art of coffee roasting for the past 10 years, solely focused on sourcing, roasting and supplying some of the world's best specialty coffee to their customers across Leicestershire and the UK. They're passionate Tigers fans, and St. Martin's have long-standing connections with the club and are proud to help caffeinate the players and staff in their efforts on and off the pitch. In an effort to help the fans wake up on match days, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are offering 20% off all coffee when listeners use the code ROLLINGBALL, that's all one word, on their website. So visit stmartinscoffee.co.uk to stock up on locally roasted specialty coffee and use the code ROLLINGBALL, all one word, to save 20% off your next purchase. The news section is brought to you by Parish Brewery, who are offering you and your pub free beer. Now that I've got your attention, Parish Brewery award-winning ales are brewed in a 400-year-old converted stable block in Borough-on-the-Hill in rural East Leicestershire. It's here that they follow the traditional ways of brewing, using only the finest ingredients to brew their cask-conditioned beer. In addition to the many beer festival awards, the brewery is the proud recipient of a Guinness Book of World Records award in 1994 for having brewed the world's strongest beer at that time, Baz's Superbrew, and its offspring, Baz's Bonce Blower, is still going strong. Very strong, but absolutely delicious. Now back to the free beer. Parish are offering you the chance to win four perfect pints of their ale to enjoy at your local. All you have to do is tell them on Instagram or Facebook what your favourite Parish flavour is. If you're yet to try one, you can check out which one will tickle your taste buds by visiting parishbrewery.co.uk. Not only will you win, but so will your pub, as they'll be gifted a free pin, and that's 36 delicious pints to you and I. So get on your socials, tell Parish your favourite flavour, and get a chance for some free beer. It's that easy. Competition closes on 31st November 2023. Participating pubs only. All entrants must be 18 or over. Full terms and conditions apply. Okay, time for the beep, 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 beep news section. And I'm going to start off with, like, I guess, some sort of injury guesswork. Because whilst I think Tigers have got a bit better in telling us about injuries, and Dan McKellar is sometimes more open, sometimes he's not, there's still the, I suppose, traditional horror of the match day squad being announced, minus a couple of players who you expected to see. Obviously, the really noticeable one, and I think as we'll come to, potentially a really costly one, was Tommy Raphael not starting. The commentary said during the game, in case you missed it, that he had a head knock during the week. So hopefully it's not too bad, but he'll go through concussion protocols. Provided he passes all of those, then he should be available to play against Saints, which is very important. Similar story.
Dan McKellar said, just to jump in on that, when Dan McKellar did say on Radio Leicester, just say he took a knock to the head and he was an elbow to the head and he had some blurred vision on Saturday morning. So he just took the precautionary take of just, look, if you've got blurred vision, size. Just let's just do good, the sensible good thing to hear and stand
that
you down.
As well. Good to hear that as well. I think, again, I can see why. I think the players will really enjoy playing for Dan McCullough and will play for him because he's a guy that obviously has their interests at heart as well. We've seen that with guys getting the extra week's break as well. Shilcock, we think, might be a similar story, don't we?
Yeah, he went off at Saris for HIA. He did then come back, but obviously with these head knocks and concussion events, you can have sort of latent symptoms come on or delayed symptoms that come on 24, 48 hours post a game or post event. So it wouldn't surprise me if he had the game on Saturday, he comes off the HIA, whether it's on the Sunday or the Monday, concussion symptoms start coming through and they just take the precautionary stand down. Because he was clearly in training today. I mean, we recorded this on Monday and he's in the social media stuff today. So he's clearly back in training. So it's clearly not a biggie. But to me, he would have been a nailed on for the 22 shirts. The fact that they wasn't there would suggest it was it's probably linked into to the knock he took against Saris.
Just on that, have I ever told you about the time I got knocked out playing rugby where I passed all? It was the old days where you'd have a physio come on and they'd ask you a bunch of questions. And they were set questions, I think, by the World Rugby or the RFU at the time. And I had to answer them all in order to continue playing. And I came, and I think I got knocked out on a pick and go and basically I collided with somebody's knee. And I don't remember being asked the questions, but apparently I passed them all. And then I was just sort of like running around looking more aimless than normal. 5 minutes later, the physio comes back on and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing or where I am. And I got taken off and sat on the sidelines. I didn't know why. I just started blubbing my eyes out, completely, like, absolutely bawling. And you know, I had like people go, yeah, all right, what's the matter? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just like overwhelmingly sad. And apparently I had to go to the doctor to get checked out afterwards. They're like, yeah, sometimes kind of when you've been concussed, basically parts of your brain that control emotions go completely haywire. So they've had cases of other people just hysterically laughing. But of course me, I had to start blubbing, didn't I? Quite an emotional person.
You just take your rugby seriously.
I do. And it was against a team that we always lost by 2 points to against. And again, I beat myself up about that because I should have scored that pick and go. Anyway, enough of my stories of very, very average rugby tales. We're going to move on to the slightly more sobering and detailed news of the annual accounts, which I suppose for most of the Premiership teams, including us, have become sort of like an annual date of dread.
Yeah, I mean, no one comes out of it pretty well in these circumstances. It's just a case of who can be less shit than the others. We've put the first marker down by putting our announcement out. And the headline news is it's an improvement on last year. So last year we lost £2 million. This year we've made a loss of £1.5 million. So, you know, the only way is up. But it is an improvement. And in tough financial times, the club in the accounts last year that said it was a 5-year strategy to get back towards profitability. So clearly wasn't going to be built overnight. It was never going to be a dramatic turnaround in terms of find 2 million quid down the back of the sofa. Hey, look at us back into profitability. And also, you know, there's stuff like, yes, we got the accounts quite interesting because you find out we got about £1 million from the RFU for Kev and Steve. But at the same point on the counterpoint, we spent £800,000 to get the pitch relayed. And then we lost out on £800,000 worth of income from the Wasps and Worcester game. So they're actually quite a complicated set of accounts in terms of, in some ways we're good, in some ways things have gone against us. So in a nutshell, in a tough time to have made an improvement in our losses, considering the challenges we have faced over the last 12 months, I think that is something to be pleased with in terms of there is an upwards trend going on.
Absolutely. And I think that's the important thing because when I first saw, as you say, the headline of £1.5 million loss versus £2 million last year, and whilst it's still unpalatable, it is a step in the right direction. I did think, oh, well, is that just because, you know, we've got the £1 million from, you know, Kev and Steve going? But actually, it kind of almost gets entirely offset, like you say, by the fact that we lost two home fixtures, which, as we worked out from the accounts, are worth about £400,000 each to the club. So that kind of cancels out. So actually, you would look at that and say, well, you know, £1.5 million is actually almost a bona fide £500,000 improvement, effectively on where we were before. And the pitch relay, I mean, we'll have to get one of the ground staff on maybe to come and talk to us about it, because they always seem to do a phenomenal job. But the pitch being fully relayed, I mean, that's got to be an investment that I presume has to be done once every few years.
I would suspect it. I think it's... I'm trying to think when Leicester City... Because Brendan Rodgers...
I don't think they do it every year, do they?
No, they don't. So Leicester City had theirs done, I think, 12-18. It was either the year before we had ours done at the same time as when we had ours done. And it was probably the first time it had been relayed in about 6-7 years. So it is it's a one-time job, but should last you somewhere between 5 to 10 years, depends on what you want to achieve. And you have to say, looking at the pitch, I mean, you look at the games that we play in January, February time, it looks pristine and still looks good enough to play football on, let alone again rugby. So quite clearly, it is a good thing, which it's a one-off investment. So it's a high cost, but you then won't have to repeat it again for the next 2 or 3 years. So
is that entirely right? Because that they didn't relay it again over the summer, because obviously they let all of us idiots onto the pitch at the end of the Quinns game at the end of last season.
Well, if it's going to cost you £800 a time, you wouldn't relay it. You'd effectively just, without being an expert on it, you'd just resew it, I'd imagine.
Resew it, that's the phrase.
We could just resew it and we just put it to bed for a little bit, let it grow out, resew it, and then cut it and get it pristine again. So there is...
cut it, draw some lines, fucking Bob's your uncle. Sounds like an easy job.
I mean, the school pitch I used to play on, which consisted of like, I was like, there was a shopping trolley on halfway or something.
Oh, yeah. It's like playing on, like, who was it who played in Leicester? They played their home games at Vicky Park. Was it Aylston St James? No,
they've got their own ground around the corner.
Yeah, because that was Jimmy's, and they were right next door to Stonygate, where my old man played, and I played a couple of seasons at as well. That was always a tasty derby fixture, playing your literal next door neighbours. But there was a team that played on Aylston St James, on Vicky Park, and we had to do the sweep beforehand to go and pick up dog shit. Nothing says grassroots rugby like that.
Well, at least it's dog shit, not needles. I mean, it's both as bad as each other.
But yeah, bit of column A, bit of column B. There was another team we played, I remember that, if you were running in a line, that it was so uneven. It was like you were on a roller coaster. You were just kind of like going up and down in a wave motion. So that was pretty interesting. Yeah, so I mean, like... I think overall, like you say, it goes to show where the game is at the moment. You know, we attract the biggest crowds in the league. We're probably, going by social media, we've probably got the best commercial value in the league, and we're still, posting £1.5 million loss. But I think you'd probably be confident enough to say baby steps, hopefully, in the right direction.
There is actually, I haven't done a proper deep dive yet, and we in a minute we'll do a shout out to someone who has. But from the stuff that I did look at, and there's a couple of interesting lines which I've seen already. One of which is that we got the maximum RFU rebate or payment, depending on how you want to describe it, for fielding the targeted number of EQP, so England qualified players, in a year. So I think, because Steve mentioned it in an interview a couple of years ago, that he wanted to get the numbers up. So I think it's about 15 or 16 EQP players in a match day 23 you have to have at least. And we clearly had the required number because we got the maximum payout from the RFU for it. So it's worth, it's just an interesting line because ultimately it almost indicates a bit of it gives an eye, I think, into sort of a strategy of the club in terms of how they want to go about the squad building and how they want the club to be in terms of having a lot of key important English talent on the field supported by top draw overseas talent. So not having overseas talent.
Not having the journeymen, that I think that was the criticism of the club before. But it also feeds into the really good point you made either last week or the week before, where you say actually English players, because of the way now there's going to be less overlap with internationals, taking obviously the World Cup that's just been as an exception, of course, it means that actually the English players are going to be the premium, as opposed to the foreign imports, which were the ones that could attract, the top dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way the league, and we've seen it obviously with Jasper with his contract negotiations that are going on. Obviously, the club will probably know what the structure of the season will be in terms of Premiership and Rugby Championship. So they can make decisions based around that. The reality is that the game is now set up for getting the English players on the pitch as much as possible. So they become actually A1 or tier one sort of requirements, because one, the season's going to be built around having them on the pitch as much as possible. And secondly, there is a monetary value for it. It is an interesting line in the account. So I think we got over £1 million from the RFU because we hit the full quota of the full allocation of field in the English qualified players. So, you know, if when you're sort of seeing if in terms of replacement players or our recruitment, you just go, oh, hang on, why are we only targeting English players? Well, I think there is possibly a reason why that, in terms of looking at homegrown. One, it's obviously a good thing to have homegrown players, but secondly, there is a monetary value that's behind it as well.
One thing we haven't discussed, actually, which I wonder they will carry on doing going forward, to maintain the value of imported players, you've got to get the balance right, haven't you? Because you don't want it just to become a league that is solely English players or British players, whatever you want. You want that sort of star quality from abroad. Yes, perhaps, you know, before it's been too weighted in one direction as opposed to the other. But you still want, you know, each team really to have two or three kind of like big names from South Africa, New Zealand, Argentina, Australia, Fiji, wherever you want, you know, like big, big rugby nations. But I wonder if, to sort of soften the blow of these guys being tied up in the Rugby Championship, they might continue to play the Premiership Cup at the start of each season. I don't know if that's been announced yet. I might have missed it. But that would seem to be a logical thing to do.
Well, ultimately, you're like, having Andre Pollard in the league is a good thing. Having Julian Montoya in the league is a good thing. That's from a Leicester perspective. It's good for me because I get to watch Leicester with some quality players. But it is ultimately, it's good for the league to have the best of the best, if you can get it, into the league. Now, obviously, there are numerous challenges going around Premiership rugby. But ultimately, what you want is, if you have an overseas player, they've got to be a starter, because ultimately, otherwise, it almost defeats the object. Because if you're just going to have someone, a journeyman in the team, who's blocking a youngster, the whole point is, if you want the best players on the pitch as much as possible, whether they're English or whether they're from overseas, because having better quality of players means a better quality of league, and it also means the youngsters coming through have got a better standards to learn from and to emulate to get better. So I'm not all about having, we need a certain quota of English players, or we need to have a certain quota overseas. It's about getting the best quality players on the pitch as much as possible. But it can only be a good thing for us in that, you know, Steve basically, three, four years ago, Steve recognised he'd got a whole host of young, up-and-coming youngsters coming through, and allowed them to develop by getting some real top-quality South African and overseas players to help develop alongside them. So it became a nice balance of having, you know, that quid pro quo about it. So look, it's just an interesting thing that stood out in the account. So it was just an interesting line. On the accounts, before we move on, shout out to SPK, who is very, very good at numbers across the board in statistics and all different things.
He is awesome at it. And to the point where I think if we're having sort of a bit of a dry week and we want to make it even drier, SPK, we're going to be dropping you a line. You've got to come on the pod if you fancy it, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Because check it out on Twitter if you haven't already. He's done a very good thread actually going through the accounts and pulling out all the... he's done a deep dive and pulled out all the pertinent figures and done a nice thread across all the different aspects of the accounts, and also has his very own spreadsheets, which he does in the background and can compare the numbers from previous years.
I love his spreadsheets. He does them for like players and appearances and everything, doesn't he?
His spreadsheet game is very, very strong. And it actually is a very nice...
It turns me on a little bit, to be honest.
Well, let's make sure you never meet, because I think SPK will have to do a restraining order. But no, it is a very good thread, and check it out, because actually all... There is a reason why I've not really done much about it, because SPK summed it up so brilliantly. There's not much wiggle room. He's done a very good job and comprehensively telling a story off the accounts and in layman's terms to make it easy to understand. So have a read, and you come away a lot more informed about the accounts and the numbers that sit behind it.
One thing we forgot to mention in the intro, which I'm going to put in this news section as well, is Leicester Tigers women, who open up their Premiership account on Sunday, don't they, at Matty Ollie Woods, Welford Road, against Exeter Chiefs women. It's going to be tough. We've seen that already from the, I think from their version of the Premiership Cup, haven't we? That obviously this is going to be a significant step up for a lot of these women. But at the same time, I'm not sure what the position is in terms of getting England players back. Hopefully there's going to be some returning star quality. It should be a fantastic day. So if you've got your Sunday free, please, please get down. You've not got, you know, a thick head from the derby day. Or even if you do, just carry on, plow on into Sunday and get down and support the girls, because it should be wicked. And on that note, the LTW fancast, Leicester Tigers women's fancast, set up by our good friends Jess Bunyard and Jacob Bassford, who I've just realised sign off messages JB, but they've both got the same initials. Guys,
I think in their, to be fair, in their bio on the Twitter account, they've put a thing in to differentiate one from the other. So this is, one is JB and one is JP.
Ain't nobody got time to read the bio, mate. Who reads a bio? What is this?
Okay, now I'm going to change ours. I'm going to put some wild stuff in ours and let's see if anyone reads it.
But more to the point, the LTW Fancast started this week. It's going to be fantastic. They're both really, really knowledgeable, and it's going to be really, really good fun. It means Leicester Tigers won't get full focus in that podcast, so please give them a listen. They also say apparently they rip us to shreds in their first podcast, which seems frankly unfair, but I will take it in good humour, unless I don't, in which case I'm going to come back with some particularly vindictive shit next week.
Yeah, and so that's the positive bit. We are going to end on one bit of negative from the on the news. There's a tweet which did the rounds yesterday on social media about some particularly shit behaviour, quite frankly, from members of the fans in the stadium on Saturday's game, where effectively an adult was encouraging, who was in charge of his team or school or club or whatever it was. Basically, he was heading up a team of youngsters and was encouraging his youngsters to catcall and harass and just dish out some pretty unpleasant things to the female TV presenter who was doing her job on Saturday. Look, I mean, just don't be a dickhead. I mean,
fucking grow up. Like, I mean, like, seriously, I mean, like you say, it's particularly sad when it's going to be young, impressionable boys who are being, you know, encouraged to engage in this behaviour. And what kind of men do you think they're going to become going on? And they're going to think that behaviour is acceptable. Look, I'm not one of those people that kind of will frown at people swearing on the terrace or anything like that. My goodness, my language on Saturday, occasionally when you get frustrated, when James Cronin dropped the ball right in front of me on the line, I can't repeat what I said, but it wasn't particularly clean. But stuff like that happens. I like it when the crowd gets angry, when it gets intimidating, when it gets noisy. I think we're too quiet at Welford Road a lot of the time. That is a completely different kettle of fish to deliberately disrespecting someone and harassing them like that. I think that's absolutely appalling. And well done to the person that called that out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of us in the stadium, it's a really embarrassing thing that it's our own fans as well in our own stadium that's doing it. I think that is particularly embarrassing, and it is pretty, pretty crap stuff. It's pretty bad darts, to be honest. So I think it's all of us, it's incumbent on us in the ground is that, A, don't be a dickhead. And secondly, if you do see someone prattling around, fucking fair play to whoever it was, actually had the balls to do it in the ground. Call it out. You know, let's call it out for what it
even
is.
Even if you can't call it out to that person directly because you don't feel safe, please mention it to a steward, because, you know, we want a wicked atmosphere at the stadium, and we don't want it to become a place where that kind of behaviour is accepted, because, like you say, it's just crap.
Absolutely. We need to, let's make it a fun place to be rather than a crap. Let's have complaints coming off the back of it.
All right, then. Let's get into another defeat. This wasn't like this in the first season of the podcast, was it? Was it 11 wins on the bounce?
Yeah, I don't like this season so far.
I don't. It was last season was a bit, we went through a bit of a sticky period as well. I don't like this realistic, normal podcasting. I like the sort of the make-believe podcasting that we did in our first year. Anyway, let's talk about the defeat at Matty Elliwood's Welford Road. It kicked off 3:05, and it was obviously a home game against Quinns, which we lost 29-25, 5-3. The 5 tries is a bitter pill to swallow, despite playing against Quinns, who are obviously notoriously excellent at their attacking game. Brilliant game if you're a neutral, I think, because I think it was back and forth. Really good to watch. Lots of good rugby from both sides. Just felt Quinns were that much more clinical. And I don't know about you, mate, but like when I came out of the ground and I was looking at the stuff on social media, there was it felt very negative, didn't it? Because it was crushingly disappointing to lose with some of our big names back. Not all of them, we've got to emphasize that, with some of our big names back. And it was just really gutting to lose in the way we did, albeit I think we've got to get it out of the way. I thought Quins were deserved winners. That said, I think if we'd have nicked another try, I think we'd have been deserved winners. It was that kind of game. But I think both of us agree, because we're both dorks and we both had sort of like a cold, sober rewatch of it, that there's actually a lot more to be optimistic about in this performance than I think any other so far this season. I include the win against Bath in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to sort of back that up, the statistics, I equally felt, came away exactly the same as you, going, it's frustrating because we're not a million miles off. If you get tonked, you know there's a big uphill battle to get it right. This one, there isn't a lot of difference between winning and losing. And the statistics sort of bear that out in terms of we made more carries than Quins. We made more meters than Quins. We made more passes than Quins. We made double the amount of offloads than Quins. We beat more defenders than Quins. We kicked the same amount as Quins, and they're seen as one of the most attacking teams in the league. We had greater ruck success than Quins. We won more rucks than Quins, and we won more turnover compared to Quins. So those are all in the statistics that TNT and Premiership Rugby have provided. So, you know, on first viewing, I didn't think we were far off. Second viewing reinforced my view that we weren't a million miles off. And the statistics actually show that, you know what, there's a lot of things going for us. And that's really interesting in terms of that. And a lot, you know, if you think people are listening in to thinking we're going to slag the players off, it's not going to happen because there is positives out there and there isn't a lot of difference between winning and losing. The issue that Leicester have got is that you can't make the amount of mistakes that we have made in a game,
yes,
and expect to win a game with rugby, because there's so many errors in the game, whether it's unforced errors as well, in particular, where under no pressure we're making errors. Now, and this is where it gets interesting, because you go, are these coaching things responsible or are they player things responsible? You know, Monday to Friday, the coaches coach the players. But ultimately, the players cross the white line on a Saturday and they're the ones that play the games. So who ultimately, where does the responsibility lie? And the reality is it's both. And we'll go into it into how, but we'll use a couple of examples. If the line out, for example, and Dan Kelly's almost notable drop, the line out, as we'll get into, is a coaching issue. Dan Kelly inexplicably dropping the ball when there's a three-man overlap is a player issue, unfortunately. And this is where everyone inside the group, whether it's coaches or players, everyone has to take responsibility for their actions. And the players ultimately have got to be a bit more responsible for their actions, both in terms of the handling errors. There's some really sloppy hands on show. And actually, some of the penalties that they gave away, and at the times that they gave penalties away, I mean, I'll hand it back over in a sec, but the classic example for me when I watched the game back was at 25-24 with 13 minutes left. You've got yourself in front. It's an arm wrestle. It's an end-to-end game, but you finally got a lead. Kick on. You know, you just try and you play the game in the other half. You play the game where you want to be playing the game. What you don't do, which what we did, is give away a bit of a daft penalty for a high tackle, which just gives Quins a shot to put the ball back into our 22. So you've not escaped. Yeah, you've
release valve actually, is gone. Our exits are still not good enough, because if we do something good, we often invite something bad to happen immediately after. And that's kind of that case again, because, you know, I think it's from the kickoff, we regather, we clear, and it's from that that we can see the high tackle. As soon as you can see the penalty, you know, around halfway, you're just inviting that pressure straight back on, aren't you?
Yeah, and it takes Quins another 3 or 4 minutes to actually score the try, so it's not a direct action. But what you've done is you've given an attacking side, prime attacking position, directly in your own 22. You're not playing the game in the areas of the pitch where you want to be. You can only concede in this area. You can't score. Whereas if you're playing the game in Quins's half, you'd already seen that we started to eke a couple of penalties out. We were starting to put them under pressure. Our physicality was asking questions in the right ways. That's the time you can actually, if you get a penalty and you've got Polly on the pitch, well, you can bang it over and suddenly one point lead becomes four. And this is where ultimately Tigers also aren't a million miles off, and they will take heart from that. And we both have took heart from it. And McKellar will take heart from it. But what McKellar doesn't have is the gift of time. And this is where the pressure comes on, because he doesn't have. I said this to you, if we were on week one of an 18 game season and we're just doing Saturday's game, you'd be disappointed, but you can cope with it because there's a lot of rugby left. if it was a week five of a 22 or a 24 game season, and we just had to start, we'd have, again, you'd be really disappointed, but there's enough time to catch back up. What McKellar doesn't have is time, because effectively with an 18 game season, there's not a lot of fat in the season. It's quite lean. We've used up almost 90% of that sort of whatever fat there is, you've used it up. So therefore, all of these things are, we're not miles off, and all of these problems are fixable, and they're pretty fixable pretty quickly, but they have to be, because he doesn't have any other option.
Yeah.
Because that time element has gone. And I actually feel quite, he's unlucky in a way. And so are we as a club and supporters, because we've lost so many players to the World Cup, and we've got a brand new coaching team. And then we were unlucky in terms of stuff like the howler of a TMO decision against Sale. So we have been quite unlucky. At other points, our problems are self-inflicted in terms of the error count all the way through our season has been way too high. Our discipline at times all the way through the season has been way too high in a negative way. You know, the Bristol game, with every week that goes by, looks more self-inflicted.
That was just a complete non-event. I think the others, you know, you could come down to sort of separate incidents, can't you? And you can like pull it apart. But like you say, the Bristol game, particularly the first half, second half had something about it. Last 30 had something about it anyway. But that first half, you know, was just so shambolic in almost every aspect. Like you say, it does feel like that's going to be something that could bite us going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the things. There isn't a room for manoeuvre in an 18-game season. And unfortunately, the fat or that room to manoeuvre has been lost. And so the overall performances, you know, the stats, on first viewing, I came away from Saturday's game and I was really disappointed, but I didn't think we were a million miles off. You look at the statistics and you watch the game again, it really reinforced that view, because that's actually the best performance of the season.
It is.
So there's a lot to like about how we played on Saturday. And I know it's not good enough. And I know the result wasn't good enough. And I know there's a lot of things we need to be better. And I'm not going to say otherwise. We're all disappointed. And me and you are not going to try and claim that everything's fine. It's not. And McKellar knows this. But just because we lost doesn't mean positives don't exist. And it doesn't mean that good things didn't happen, because they did. The problem is that we have gone past the point now of nice, of dignified defeats, to use a phrase. We've gone past that point. In professional sport, the only currency that matters is winning. And McKellar knows this. He's an intelligent enough man to know now that, irrespective of anything, it's results that matter, and results are the currency that drives everything. And it has to be results from now on in that get us going. The upside is that we have been here before, albeit in slightly different circumstances. This group has delivered. You know, as much as it's changed over the last 3 years, it's still the same group that took us from nowhere to sixth in Steve's first year. It's still a lot of the same group that won us the league. And it's still a lot of the same group that took us from nowhere in eighth position back in February to winning six or seven games in a row, taking us to third. So this group has earned our faith. And we just have to stick in with a little bit, because they've demonstrated, they've earned our faith and they've earned our belief. They've just got to go out and show it. And I have enough belief in the boys based on their track record for them to go out and do it. But it is tough at the moment, but there are still lots of good things to be happy about.
I think all the best coaches look at the performance and, you know, assume that the wins will come from that. And like you say, we're not going to sugarcoat stuff, say, oh, it was great, we were just a bit unlucky. The point is, I think we're about 5% off in a few areas. And those things were the difference between us, I'd say, not just winning, but winning well. And that's with all respect to Quinns, who I thought was so clinical. Very, very good side. Very evenly matched, I thought, across the park. Some fantastic battles. I thought Will Evans was outstanding for them. I actually did this sort of very dorky Twitter thread as I was watching the game last night. And I thought I'd try to pick out five key things for me that looked like sort of things where we were just off compared to Quinns. I thought our clear out speed and accuracy in the first half wasn't really there. I think the second one was the jackal threat, in terms of that sort of fed it in from the first point, that we didn't have that without Montoya, without Tommy. We didn't have someone who was a natural threat over the ball. I think Hanro got in a couple of times, did a really, really good job. And he is a fantastic, what you call kind of like, you know, backup jackaler, as it were. You know, he's sort of an extra threat, but he's not the out and out guy who is going to be in every ruck making a complete pig's ear of their ball. And from that, it meant that they were able to continuously get quick ball handling. We've talked about before, that's on the players. line out, you'd probably say it's largely on the coaches. I think there was a particularly sort of heinous one after Freddie Sheeran bangs in that amazing 50-22. It was right in front of me where it went in. I was sort of waving at him to find the space because Quinns hadn't filled in at fullback. And he found it absolutely perfectly. Prime attacking opportunity. There was no movement at all. And it went up to a heavily marked Hanro Liebenberg. And you can't put any blame really on Charlie Clare there because it may have been like a shade, like about 1% underthrown. But by doing that throw without any deception, you're asking him to put in the perfect throw. You're not giving him any room for even minute error. And I think that's wrong. And then defence, of course. I think defence is a prime example of how we've got different issues. I thought in the first half, a lot of our issues were perhaps, you know, more system-based. Off the back of the line-out where they make the break for the first try. It's an inside ball from Dom Brandt and Charlie Clare, who I think is lifting Cam Henderson at the back. He sort of shoots across, follows Dom Brandt, sort of follows the ball a bit. But that means that the next guy off the rack is Henderson, who's just landing from a jump with his back turned, and he's got no chance of getting back across. So we haven't thought about, you know, who's filling in that gap behind. Now, again, we don't know. Maybe sort of the coaches look at that and say, hang on, Charlie, we told you to not shoot across like that. But we don't know. That looked to me to be more of a system thing. Our goal line defence was a bit passive. Our line speed wasn't particularly great in the first half. I thought it picked up in the second half, but then our issues in the second half with defence were almost all individual issues, one of which is just a straight-up missed tackle from Ollie Chesham, which is really surprising because you don't see him miss too many. It was one you expect him to get. And the second one, which was from Charlie Gale, not bagging because I actually thought he had a decent game elsewhere, was in the ruck on the blind side. He was the blind side guard, but then he kind of goes into a ruck that's already lost and it just leaves this 1 meter space open for them to go over. So those are sort of individual issues. And it's really frustrating. They're only 5% off and they can all be fixed. The slightly problematic thing is that I think that they are in a few different areas. So it's about how you go about fixing those, you know, within a week, which is what we need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes if you have one major flaw, it's quite easy because that's what you're concentrating on. You know, if your defense, if everything's great, but your defense has turned to shit, guess what you're going to be doing in a week? Your defense. So the issue you've got is that there's a lot of tidying up work. It's not major stuff. It's not fundamentals, but it's a lot of tidying up to get it to the best it can be. And that actually can be more time consuming because it's a lot of things. That's the issue. It's a lot of things, lots of small things. It's like tidying a house. If you've got one big room to tidy, you can just do it in a day and you blitz it. If you've got loads of little things across the house to tidy up, it can take more because you end up going, oh, we've got to do that. And I got to do that. And I got to do that. And I got to do that. And this becomes ever bigger. It's a small minutia. And this is where Mikel's got to get. And I think in certain instances, he'll benefit from some of the issues you've got is cohesion in terms of players not used to being playing alongside each other. So the clear out stuff is a great point in terms of you've got eight guys coming into the team for the first time. They're only fractionally out in terms of getting the clear out, but that's fractions enough to get Will Evans in. The second half, they almost got it out of the system. Yeah. And their clear out work goes through the gears and becomes a lot better because they've got that cohesion again. Some of the handling errors are, one, they're individuals, but secondly, they're cohesive in terms of, you can almost see it a couple of times, of players not quite sure where the pass is. There was
where Hanro overran it. I think Bourdain Kelly got the stick again for throwing the pass at Liebenberg, but he couldn't throw it back to Polly because Polly was marked. So again, you're looking at Hanro there to say, you've got to be ready to take that short ball because if it's not on out the back, like it wasn't there, you're the get out.
Yeah, this is it. And when we won the league, what they had was one of the best pre-seasons you can have. They had 12 weeks with 85, 90% of the squad there from day one. And it was uninterrupted 12 weeks. So when they started the season, it was slick. They haven't had that this time in terms of they've had 16, 17 weeks together, but of a 50% squad. You've now got 7 or 8 guys coming in. You've only had 1 week. So like they've said on the radio, Leicester have had 2 pre-seasons almost. And that's a weird thing, especially with a new coach in terms of, it's not like the Sarries boys who walk back into a system which they know and they can just pick back up relatively quickly. This is brand new stuff. And it takes as much as, and this is the issue, he doesn't have time and we don't have time, but it needs time to bed in. So they've got to learn pretty quickly. But actually, what was quite nice on Saturday was that some of the stuff we've been talking about over the last few weeks in terms of where we've been missing came to fruition.
Yeah,
and actually, well, the attacking game.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, we've kind of covered off the first two tries Quinn scored with our comments about the defence off the back of that line out. And then I think it's a really good kick by Lewis Leiter, isn't it? Brilliant cover by Kelly to get back, actually. No choice but to give away a scrum. But then our goal line defence, it looked quite passive. I think last season that was a bit of a staple of ours, wasn't it? Really aggressive goal line defence. And again, with always that ever-present jackal threat, always helps. And I think we'll probably go back on McKellar. You know, you saw the impact Ilioni had getting a turnover within the first 5 minutes he comes on. I wonder if, like, going forward, he's going to look at that and say, look, whoever's at seven, it's got to be a jackal threat, especially if you haven't got Julian playing as well. Because the Emperor, as we know, is world class over the ball. So I think that was that was a big thing. But the attacking game, we saw it actually, the build up to the penalty, actually a handling error again. I think Hanrode could have scored in the corner. I know it's a bouncing ball. It was a lovely lob by Kata, but unfortunately he couldn't take it. But obviously then that builds up to our first try, which was scored by Stewart in the corner. Lovely sort of draw, double pump by Polly, wasn't it? Sort of lofted ball over the top, great vision. But the attacking game in general, for me, I was actually really impressed with. I know it didn't always kind of get us to where we needed to be, but actually the variation that we had sort of balls back inside, we had pick and goes, we had quick ruck ball at time, we were going from touchline to touchline, we were not playing so narrow, or we would be narrow, then we'd suddenly fan out. I thought there was quite a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting to see that how quickly the game, our attacking game, changed just by having attack like carrying threats. You know, Lawrence Lallion mentioned it on comms in terms of, you know, we've spoken about it on this podcast for the last few weeks, is that we've not offered enough carrying threat. So we're actually quite easy to mark up and easy to defend against. You suddenly have got guys getting over the game line, Jasper and Kata. And the great thing about Kata is that he's always looking for an offload. Once he's made the break, he's actually trying, his next then is going, where's my next pass? Where's my offload? I'm not going to take contact for contact and recycle it. And I think this is where the impact of where McKellar instincts is coming in terms of the first try from Leicester with Hanro in the corner probably might not have been scored into Steve or Wiggy, because actually there's a lot of KBA, you know, keep the ball alive attitude from
them. Yes, sorry, that was the first try. It was Hanro, wasn't it? Freddie scored the second.
Yes, in terms of that attacking shape, in terms of one, you get over the gain line, which we've not had enough over the last few weeks. So we've broken the gain line, we've got the defence back, we've rocked them out, we're playing with quick ball, there's a bit of variation in the attacking shapes, but not only have we made a gain line success, we've tried to get the ball away. You know, Bassett, Henderson, great hands, great skills.
Dan Kelly, I'm very keen to mention him, because Polly goes for the half gap, gets the offload away. The ball is about half a yard behind Kelly. He sticks a hand out and somehow reels it in and gets the offload away. I know that we're going to come on to sort of a couple of his drops, which a lot of people have jumped on and said, oh, you know, we've got to drop Dan Kelly. But I think it's important to say that on a rewatch, he had these couple of bad moments, but he was actually integral to how we were attacking.
His link play is up there. It's still one of the best in the league in terms of those subtle just pop passes just to get people away, or just to draw the man playing close to the line and dragging the ball back.
A couple of long passes as well. Really nice long passes. A couple of his kicks, one of them worked out because Nick David made a howler out of it. Another one you think, let's just keep it in hand. But actually, aside from those two drops, I thought you had a game that was very much in the positive column. But I mean, if we're talking about, say, that try, I think we've got to mention the two returning South Africans who I thought had a big, big impact, Polly and Visa. Just how important were they for us?
Massive, because one gives you the gain line success in terms of Tigers go one out one as almost a start with to get over the gain line initially. And then it sort of speeds up quickly from there. And Jasper had a really good game in terms of his carrying work, as you'd expect. And then Pollard, just in terms of his game management, his distribution, his ability just to look calm. You know, just he always looks like he's got extra seconds compared to everyone else. He sees things that others don't. He's kicking off a tee is good. So it's a difference between a decent 10 in Shilcock and a really good 10 in Pollard.
He played very flat to the line. He was a running threat as well, which I liked.
And a carrying threat. There was quite a couple of times where he's testing the defence out, where he's carrying the ball into contact and actually he gets over the gain line. So he's not just being pushed back, he gets over the gain line. So he's a carrying success in his own right. So those two players are massive for us. And this is where it comes back to having the point of going, it's great having a big game, big players back, because you can see the impact that they have. You know, we saw it with Cronin, Tommy, and you know, in the short measures. You used to see it at the weekend. You put five or six back in, and suddenly you're seeing the impact that they've got. And the great thing is, you've still got, you know, four or five to come back in, possibly for this weekend. So it's exciting when you have that, when you've got these big game players and their super strengths, which they can bring to the team.
Another guy who had a really positive game, he was excellent off the bench last week and looks to have cemented his place in the starting lineup, was Kata. I didn't realise quite how short he is. Don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, he's shorter than Lenny. He's probably the shortest guy on our team.
Pocket rocket.
Possibly the widest. He's literally got thighs like my chest. Absolutely insane. But his power, his explosivity was outrageous. And one of his breaks should have led to a try, which I'm sure we'll mention in a second. But he brought a heck of a lot to that midfield, didn't we, that we'd been missing?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of that sort of, like, it comes back to when we won league, you almost had two sets of carriers. You had tier one carriers in terms of Jasper, Nemani, Genge, and your tier twos in terms of like your Hanros, your Montosias, your Martins, your Chessams, and stuff like that. The start of the season, we've not had enough tier one carriers. And Kata is a tier one carrier in the Nemani mold in terms of he breaks the defence and he wants to get the offload away. And I think his link play is really, really good. And what I liked about him was the not just his attacking work, but his defensive alignment. Very easy to think of someone like Manu in terms of great going forward, but with a bit of a head case in the back line where we just shoot out, create a dog leg out of nowhere, and it creates issues. He was very well aligned in terms of Kelly and Kata in terms of that approach play. They were both on the same wavelength in defence, and there was no dog legs to be able to exploit. And I like that sort of discipline.
Apart from that line out first up, we never got really ripped apart, did we? I think there was a break leading up to maybe their winning try that I think Matt Scott has just come on. He's obviously short of game time, gets caught a bit flat-footed and indecisive, which means Beard makes sort of a half breakthrough. But I mean, even that wasn't like we weren't scythed apart like we often expect against Quins.
No, absolutely not. The in the statistics, the only attacking statistic we didn't win was clean breaks. We made two and Quins made three. So again, it's not dramatic difference in numbers. So it is. Okay, because we come back to the point of we've found a centre partnership, which none of us really would predicted would look like. But it's quite fiery in terms of, you know, Kelly and Polly at 10-12 with really nice axis. And suddenly you've got Kata at 13, who's just a bull in a china shop and creating issues.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, I suppose, one of the negatives then, since we're talking about Kelly, which is obviously a couple of handling issues. And it wasn't just him, obviously. We had James Cronin dropping the ball on the line, which is infuriating. It's right in front of me. And, you know, Kat has made that fantastic break. Henderson, great support. Thought he was going to go all the way. Gets hauled down. I think Will Evans again there, making a menace of himself, arguably, you know, offside, but it doesn't matter. But effectively, you know, he's there and it's like he's not expecting it. I don't know why he's there. You either want to pick and go from there or you want to go fling it wide. I don't know why he's there. And that for me was, you know, one of the most, but since he is there, he's, you know, the only option Lenny has is to just throw it up to him. And obviously the ball goes down. So it wasn't just Kelly, but there was that point. Unfortunately, just the way it turned out ended up being the most pivotal point. I think we had a turnover. The ball goes right. You've got Polly arcing round behind Kelly and he's doing the right thing because he cuts in to fix the man and it would create a 3-on-1. And obviously there's no guarantees he would have scored, but I think it could have been likely and at least it would be a 30-metre bust up the end of the field. As it turns out, it's a scrum to Quins. It's a bit of an unlucky one because it's a loose ball, perhaps a couple of guys biting in where they don't need to, and it ends up being a fantastic finish by Tyrone Green. So it ends up being, I'm not going to say a 14-point swing, but it's certainly a pivotal moment in the game. And, you know, obviously he copped a lot of heat for it. I think you've got to hold your hands up and say that kind of drop is something that is terrible. He's not had the best start to the season, but he's been playing, you know, as effectively the experienced man in a very inexperienced, in terms of Tigers appearances, back line. I don't understand the calls necessarily to drop him because I don't see, like, he dropped a pass. You're not going to learn to catch. He knows how to catch. He's usually got good hands. This, for whatever reason, was either a lack of concentration or just one of those things where inexplicably the ball goes down. He's overthinking it, perhaps. I don't think dropping him does it. I think you show him faith. I think you appreciate his importance to the side, which you would do if you have a rewatch. And for me, like I say, if you take that drop out of it, which I know you can't because obviously you're looking at the game as a whole, but he was absolutely integral to how we attacked. And he was really good in defence as well, in terms of like keeping Kata very, very strict. And we were very tight in the midfield.
Yeah, I think after what doing the rewatch, you have to keep Kelly in, because over 80 minutes, you realise how good a game he actually had and how much link play he did have. So to take him out is actually counterproductive. Because, and that's probably actually the reason why Kata was the centre that came off for Scott, because Mikel recognises the importance of Kelly and was recognising what he was bringing to the table and to the team. So I would keep Kelly. The drop itself is inexplicable, because you can't explain it for a player of that quality to drop it. And it's almost a caveat or a sort of a counter to, you know, Tigers fans have, all of us have sort of gone, to a certain extent, have gone, well, we kick too much. You know, we need to stop kicking. Kicking game's crap. Kicking game's boring. Blah, blah, blah. You know, if Dan Kelly kicks the ball in that position 50, 60 yards down the pitch and not go for a three-man overlap, it will have upset a lot of people, but we probably go in ahead at half time ahead and we probably win the game. Yet he's done the right thing by going, recognising the three-man overlap, and he's gone to try and get the ball there, but he's inexplicably dropped it. That's the risk you take with trying to play a bit of a running game. It is something that, as fans, we have to accept that, yes, we want Tigers to move towards a more attacking game, and yes, we want to move away from kicking, but that is the payoff that comes with that. That is the risk you take. If you don't want Dan Kelly to drop it and you want him to kick it, then you've got to learn, you've got to be happy with the fact that in that situation, he could have, under Steve, booted it 50, 60 yards up the field and he doesn't drop it. If you wanted him to play a more attacking game and move the ball more, you have to accept that sometimes, occasionally, errors will happen in that process. Now, it doesn't defend Dan Kelly, because he's a good enough player and he's an experienced enough player to have not made that mistake. But that is the sort of the game you play, and that is something that we will have to accept. It's just a very unfortunate in that instance. Not only does he drop the ball when there's a three-man overlap, so he'd have gone 40 yards up the field, we then concede a try directly off it. And it's not often that happens, but it is a pretty painful moment at a pretty painful time in the game. So I'm not going to bag him, because that's actually, it's a bad miss and he should have got it. But his overall game is strong, and I think he deserves credit. And he comes away in credit despite that moment.
We still could have stopped that try. And
there's
a lot of moving parts in that. And I think it's easy to look at, you know, one isolated moment because he wasn't under pressure. It was an unforced error. It's easy to look at that and sort of point at it. And I understand that. And it's something I say he will be harder on himself than any of us will be. But I think on a rewatch, and I was looking almost for reasons to say, oh, I think, you know, he needs a bit of time out the side. And I came away thinking completely the opposite, having done the rewatch. So I'd certainly like to see him stick in the side. I really like his partnership with Polly. Another guy coming back, Freddie Stewart, obviously picked up two tries. His second, I thought, was particularly impressive because he did it on one leg. I actually saw the incident, and Don Brandt sort of falls on the side of his knee. It almost kind of hyperextends. So fantastic he was able to run that off, and it's obviously hopefully no lasting damage there. But you know, he didn't have the perfect game. I think he gave away the high tackle. You know, that was obviously led to their winning try, which was disappointing. You know, wasn't obviously a deliberate or a dangerous one. It was just a little bit clumsy, perhaps caused by, you know, some clever Quinn's blockers that kind of get in his way. But he was super effective on the kick to compete, which actually our kicks to compete were excellent all game. Shout out to Lenny there. Again, some of his service was a little scrappy in the first half, but his kicking game, bar one kick on the full, was excellent, and the chase was really good, particularly on the right where Freddie was making hay. And two well-taken tries. The guy knows how to finish. He was a strong finish for his second try, because he has to bump off the covering Nick David, I think, and he does that really well on one leg. I think, a comment for Freddie Stewart, how he played and his performance on the wing. And secondly, do you think Quinn's fans can feel a bit aggrieved by the fact that their ball over the top seemed to be not intercepted by Tempest, but Don Brandt was going for it, sort of trips over Tempest. I think Wanyama sort of catches it, doesn't it? And then the ball gets turned over by us and we score in a couple of phases.
No, so on Freddie Stewart first, I thought he had a really good game. I do like him on the wing. It shouldn't work, but it sort of does. In terms of, I do think he's a pretty good finisher. In terms of the tries he scored whenever he's been in the wide channels, he always seems to get through and bump through his opposite defender to get to the line. And I do think that physicality brings, I mean, you've got to remember he's almost 17 stone. So he's not small. And that, you know, that counts for something when you're in those wide exchanges and you're one on one. That does count for something to get over the line. So ultimately, I do like him on the wing. I think there are obviously pace questions because he's not the quickest of wingers, but he makes up for it with positional.
He's positionally excellent.
He is. And he's also very, very sound under the high ball, as we know. So therefore, he actually diffuses a lot. And I think he actually worked quite nicely with Brown. I thought the two of them intertwined quite nicely in terms of their sort of backfield work. So I don't have an issue with Freddie Stewart on the wing. And I've actually got him on the wing again for Saints this weekend. So I'm not too upset with that. I think, Freddie brings just a calmness in terms
and
of like
a good kicking game as well, which is underrated.
He does. And in the same way that Polly has it and Lenny has it, he just has a bit extra class compared to his peers around him. There's an extra, it always feels like he's got an extra element of time, you know, a second more than he actually does have. And I think that's the sign of a good player. In terms of that try itself, I can understand why why Quinns fans are upset. And I suspect I would be very annoyed if it had happened to me and to us. However, for a big lad, Don Brunt, Donaf go down very soft off a pretty nondescript challenge. I mean, for a big number eight, Donaf go down like a sack of spuds. And at the same point, the lad's got the ball. Do you know what I mean? He's fielded. It has nothing to do with the fact.
I think I said Wanyama a minute ago. He's a footballer. I've of course meant Anyanwu, who otherwise was very solid, but he does get the ball. He just coughs it up in the tackle.
And I think that's what Tempest basically says to Don Brandt in terms of, not my problem. You had the ball and then you've knocked it on.
I think he also said that the protocol is only if the ball touches him or he gets in the way of a tackle or trips up the ball carrier. And he's done none of those things. So, I mean, common sense, you know, if I'm being honest, if it was on the other side, I'd be screaming for a scrum. But at the same time, the way he's explained it, you can also understand why he let it go.
And as much as dare I say it, it's going to shock me. I actually didn't think Tempest had a bad game. I actually thought he was a bit chaotic, but...
Yeah, there was that bit I sent you a clip of. I think it was just before we get turned over in the first half. I think Hanro gets stripped. Hanro had a surprisingly off sort of first 10 minutes before he picked it up and he was class for most of the remainder of the game. But Hanro gets stripped. But actually, the phase before that, I think we make a carry. I think Charlie Clare makes a good sort of dent and he's on the ground and Joe Marler just sort of falls on him from the side. The tackle's already made. He's just doing that to slow the ball up and it's right in front of Tempest and he misses it. But yeah, that kind of stuff happens in a game. So I think there are a couple of questions, but I thought overall he was very, very good.
Yeah, I don't walk away cursing. So no, I shouted to him. I thought he handled that particular situation scenario fairly well. It's annoying, and I can understand why Quinns are frustrated, but at the same point, there is enough evidence that Tempo did make the right decision.
Yeah, agree. Coming towards the end of the game, I think one thing that perhaps disappointed me a bit. I think we had one line out, which was, you know, botched again. We've already kind of talked about the line out and we talked about it last week, so I don't want to go over it again, but I think we've got to look at doing something a bit different that isn't quite so easy to mark. I think guys are able to mark up the areas at least where we're throwing to, and so it puts a huge amount of pressure on the throwers and on the catchers as well, for that matter. So I think perhaps one disappointing thing about the end of the game was the fact that I don't think we really looked like scoring in that last 10 minutes, did we?
We couldn't get a handle of the game in terms of working a position for us to try and score some points.
We'd actually been on top in territory, ironically, up until that last 10, and then Quinns bossed that last 10 in territory.
Basically, yeah. We just couldn't. They had us at arm's length for that final 10, which meant we couldn't get near to fire a shot, not even just to win a penalty to bang it into their 22. We just had nothing really to work with. And that'll be the frustrating point, is that normally in those last 10, you get a shot. You normally get something to work with. to a certain extent, we'd probably used up our shots in terms of the missed chances that we'd had in the first 70. I think the rugby gods probably said, we've had enough chances to score some points. You know, you can't do it in the last 10, I guess. But that's the frustrating point, is again, and it links into that point of when you go 25-24, we just didn't take the game by the scruff of the neck and take it to a position. We just didn't squeeze our way to a win. And when Tigers were hot last year, they'd have squeezed that game out. They'd have seen it through and they'd dragged themselves over the line. 2 years ago, when we went on the way to the title, a point in front was all they needed with 15 minutes to go, to go, right, we'll score some more points from here and we'll win the game and we'll take it by a scruff of the neck. They didn't do that. And I don't know if that's a leadership thing. And then there's enough leaders on the pitch, but at the same point, you know, years gone by, we've had Genja, Montoya. You know, we didn't have Montoya on the field. You didn't have Tommy. So these are our senior players. So I have a sneaky suspicion we just lacked people. Just, and I like Hanro and he's a good player, but I think this is where sometimes the weakness of him as an on-field captain is, in terms of grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck. I think he's not in that space as a leader. I think he's a great leader, but in a different capacity. You just need someone to really, like Jono would do, just wave, right, scruff of the neck, we're going to fucking do this for the next 10, 15 minutes. We just didn't have that.
I think Hanro is one of those guys, like I say, leads by example. He does everything he can, but I don't think he's as vocal as Montoya, who has that capability of again, leading by example, but at the same time, like roaring and bellowing to his teammates to follow him. And I think, you know, it's just almost like an extrovert versus introvert thing. And you need that balance, because I think Hanro is a phenomenal leader. But like you say, if he's there, he probably needs a lieutenant who's doing a similar role, but screaming about it as well and letting the opposition know about it, which the Emperor does very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just, again, it comes back to the point of it's small margins. These aren't big fixes, but it's fine margins. There's not a lot of difference between winning and losing. It's just, unfortunately, this is a fine margin where, you know, the extra couple of percentage points that Montoya brings with him is probably the difference between, you know, winning and losing. So look, overall, it's a tough one to take, because we are so close and it feels close, but it kicks a bit harder because we don't have the element of time, which we would have done before. Every game, that desperation is, it's got to be on this game. And we're going to feel it going into the Saints game. You know, we've got to win. And we do have to win. Now that does help us, but it also means that if you do lose, it kicks a lot harder. And I think that's where all of us as Tigers fans are wanting the same thing, which is we want Leicester to win. The issue is that we don't, and we've not had the start to the season we've had and we wanted, and it kicks really hard. We think it's all over before it's even begun. There's a lovely line from when Tom Young's retired and he did that video with Ben Young, and he said, you just got to hold your head to the wheel, or put your shoulders to the wheel, because eventually it will turn. And when it turns, it will turn pretty quickly, and you've got to be there for it because you enjoy it. I think all of us as fans have got to do that same thing, where we just put our shoulders to the wheel, metaphorically and back for boys for a bit, because when it turns, it will turn pretty fucking quickly. There's so much talent out there and have delivered for us that it really isn't that far off coming off. And when it comes off, it will be pretty mega. We've just got to be there for it. So just keep the faith would be my free word with you. If I was to be involved in such a thing, that would be mine, because it can be pretty quickly overturned, this.
Beautifully said, mate. Couldn't agree more. Right, mate, let's crack on with some three-word reviews. A few of them were along the same lines of to do with catching. There was a good one, I think, from Ian Morton. It said, crisp packet hands. But that's not the one we're going for. Elliot, you do the ones on Twitter. I'll do the ones on Facebook. Go.
Yeah, Jack Matthews and Johnny Malin put catch the ball. As we said, the handling errors did cost us. There's quite a few sort of learn to catch or stop dropping it, sort of variations on that, but those two, Jack and Johnny, put with catch the ball. Yeah, I think it's one of those games where if we had caught the ball, we'd probably win that game. I know rugby don't work that way, but sometimes it is as simple as that. So very frustrating.
Also, something like you say, what do you do as a coaching point? So lads, catch the ball. These guys, they're professionals. They all know how to catch the ball. It just happens sometimes, and just hope that it's out the system. Say we joke about catching practice, but I mean, I don't think that's really going to make a difference for things like that. Sometimes it just happens. It was just frustrating. It happened to us. On that note, Will Fry, own worst enemy. I think across the board, a lot of the stuff we did sort of self-implode, and Quinn's are too good a side not to take advantage of the opportunities that we gave them. I don't want to sound like we lost the game, because Quinn still had to very much win it. But I completely agree, Will. Own worst enemy sums it up quite nicely.
Yeah, I want to finish on a positive. Russell Allen put things will improve. Yeah, I agree with that. I think, again, we saw that actually, we even saw it in the game in terms of how we started to how the game actually went on. We improved, we became more cohesive as the game went on. We've gone up a gear since the internationals come back. Our performance levels in just a week of like of 1,000 times better. We still got 4 or 5 guys to come back in, like JVP and Watson to come back in later on in the season. So again, there's another layer of talent to come back in. So yeah, as tough as it feels at the moment, I do think things will get better. So yeah, Russell, things will improve. I'm with you on that one.
Well, now you've done that, I've got to change mine so that I also end on a positive, because can't bring it back down to a negative. So I'll go for John Burton, cohesion will come, because I think that's quite a nice, succinct way of playing it. You've got to remember that these guys, not just the players on the pitch, some of them are playing together for the first time, but they're playing under a completely new coach. And whilst a lot of the things are the same, it's clear the way we tried to play against Quins was very different to anything we were really even doing under Wiggy. It was far more expansive and ambitious.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, we the evidence is there actually in the first try in terms of, if you think back to all the last 2-3 years, that's probably try we wouldn't have scored. You know, we'd have took contact, we'd have recycled and gone through a phase.
Well, they'd have they took the contact, but they wouldn't have looked for that offload. They wouldn't have taken the risky offload option.
No, absolutely. And that's exciting because actually when it does click, I think we can take teams apart and I think we can score a lot of points. You know, again, there's so much talent in the playing group and they've proven talent that I think this way of playing suits them. So it will come. It will come.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, very lucky to be joined by Young Leicester Tigers hooker, Archie Vaines. Archie, mate, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Going well.
Good training session today?
Yeah, it was good. We're just training hard, big day Tuesdays. So just working towards the weekend to get the result.
Is this like one of those Tuesdays which is like the most physical day of the week where traditionally you'd beat the shit out of each other, but now I assume it's slightly more regulated than that.
Well, yeah, you would think that, but no, we do, the forwards especially do beat the shit out of each other. We work hard, but the backs have a bit lighter to them, but the forwards do work hard and just beat the shit out of each other. So
I always liked it, even at my crap level, which was always the same when I moved out into the backs, and it was like all of a sudden we're practicing these moves that we know we're never ever going to run ever, because inevitably our fly half, which actually in latter years turned out to be me, would drop the ball, so it was completely pointless. Or the forwards are actually grafting, so fair play. Yeah. I've got to say, it always takes a bit of getting used to. Obviously, you don't wear your glasses during the game, but there's a Clark Kent look to you at the moment. Yeah, exactly. It's very, very impressive. Let's talk about the start. I suppose your start to the season. You had a few runs in the Premiership Cup. Obviously, you've been on the bench. How do you think it's gone from a personal perspective?
Well, obviously, I didn't really know what to expect because obviously there was new coaches. And I just wanted to kind of dive into the deep end and just give 100% effort and just put my hand up every week. And yeah, obviously I got a few chances in the Prem Cup, which I was pleased with off the bench. I thought I put my hand up there and showed what I'm about in training again every week, just putting my hand up, making sure I, put my hand up again. And then last week was on the bench, obviously was a kind of a late call up. The young lads played midweek against Oxford. That was a good game. We won that and then got a late call up on the Thursday. But it is what it is. A lot of the time, young lads, it's not necessarily a kind of you playing this week. It's going to be one of those late call up. Things don't go right. And then you're on the bench. So, I mean, for me, it was just about make sure I was ready. And I feel I'm ready. It's been obviously, 4 years I've been here now. So I feel I'm like primed and ready to go.
That's a good point, because obviously as a young player coming through and you're in a position where you've got one of the world's best in the Emperor, Julio Montoya, sort of filling that spot at the moment. But how important is patience at sort of your age? Because, you know, like when you're young, you're impatient, you know, you want everything and you want it now. And because particularly when you're talented like yourself, you've got expectations. But how quickly do you have to learn that patience, and how challenging is that as part of the job?
Yeah, it's massively important. You've got to learn it early, because like you said, like all the young lads, like me as well, you're hungry and you want to play as quickly as you can. Obviously, with like the lads in the year above, some of my mates, like you've got Freddie, Chez, George, all those lads, like the younger boys, have obviously played a lot of rugby quite early. And potentially for us, like lads in the year below, younger lads, you look at them and you're like, oh, I want that to be me. But like, that isn't always the case, and kind of, I think potentially kind of my progression is almost the natural progression of potentially like a young front rower type thing. It is, that's how it is. It takes a bit more time. You've got to like rein your craft in there and just learn it, like, because obviously the scrum's a big thing. And you just got to learn off everyone, like Coley when Younger was here, Charlie Clare, Julian, all that. But like you said, obviously I've got the Emperor. Julian.
Yeah, that's mine. I warned you beforehand about our tendencies to give nicknames. That was one of the better ones.
Yeah, that's a good nickname, that is. But yeah, like he's always a good help. And yeah, all lads here, they're just always on your shoulder, ready to help you whenever you need them, really.
We've mentioned him just a second ago. So what kind of stuff do you like pick up from Julian? And you can get as naughty as you want on the techie stuff here, because we've got a lot of geeks that listen to this. So how important is it to learn your craft off somebody like that?
Yeah, it's very important. Obviously, you kind of idolise him. Obviously, when it was Julian and Younger, like, you idolise Younger and then Julian. Obviously, just Julian being who he is, like, he's very humble with what he's done. He obviously captains Argentina and things like that. And the things he's done and doing is something, obviously, I look up to and something I'm going to do in my career. So just always, it's not necessarily, obviously, the stage I'm at now, it's not necessarily massive conversations all the time. It's just little questions I ask him and the little things he gives to me, which obviously go a long way, whether that be in the scrum or just in general play, like little things. Because a lot of it is obviously just kind of when you are ready to go, it's not necessarily the actual physical side of it. It's when you're there, knowing what to do at scrum time. A big thing for me that I've got to get better at is kind of like leading the scrum, and that obviously comes with knowledge. And you can get, like, I'll say Julian, Coley, and them, they give you that much knowledge. They know so much. So you just got to get off them as much as you can while they're still there.
While similarly trying to sort of steal their spots.
That's
the thing. That's why you got these world-class players like Julian, because if it was me in that position, I'd be far too egotistical to give any knowledge, or I'd tell you the wrong thing to sort of like try and keep the upstarts at bay.
Yeah. But he knows he's that far ahead, he knows. So
you mentioned it a second ago, and it was something I'd forgotten to write down, but list some questions, because obviously sort of as a younger person breaking into the team, lots of fans know about you and are excited about you, but obviously, you know, you haven't had your face splashed all over the papers like Freddie Stewart has. You know, he's modelling for fucking Tommy Hilfiger now. Has he had any stick for that?
I'm not sure. I know he gets a bit of stick for when he was crying in the national anthem.
Oh, that's mean. I'm not having that.
He was crying a few times at that.
Yeah, he's an emotional boy, Alfred, but we love him for that. Yeah, but so can you tell us a little bit, I suppose, about your journey into rugby and how you've got to where you are?
Well, when I think I started playing when I was under sixes at Melbourne Rugby Club in Derbyshire. Started there, and then I moved. But when I was 13, I went to school in Leicestershire, and at that time, it was quite a young age, but at that time, I felt like, because obviously, well, the Tigers DPP started, and I felt the best thing for my rugby was to move to a Leicestershire club. So I moved to Ashby Rugby Club, where a lot of my schoolmates were. So I was there, and then under 13s to 14s, I got picked up through the DPP, through my school, Ivanhoe College. And then from there, got kept on through the system from the 15s, 16s. And then we went to Wellington Festival, and then I got dropped off the Wellington Festival. Well, released. I say dropped at that age. It's not really. And then carried on playing for my club. And then I went to Brooksby Mountain College, which Tigers is affiliated with the age program. And then basically from there, I got asked to go into the pre-season at the academy. Did the whole of that and then got signed on after that. And then just, yeah, went from there, 17s. Obviously, joint captain, the 18s with Sammy Edwards. That was good. And then and from there, signed to the development squad. And then that's it, really. From there, just been at Tigers. Obviously, got 20s in my first year. That was good. Managed to get the grand slam there. And then just been kind of chipping away.
A lot, I like the casual drop of a grand slam in at the end there. That's pretty cool. But the it's amazing as well because you've already sort of faced some adversity, like you say, and kind of like it's not been a completely straight path for you. You sort of like had to go away and sort of like reinvigorate yourself. I assume that kind of thing motivates you rather than kind of puts you down too much then.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah, obviously it does because you don't want to, obviously Tigers is my boyhood club and I've always wanted to be here and not, like if at that time I got released and you obviously, then you want to get back on the horse and you want to make sure you're there again because you don't want to, you don't want to be kind of left in the dark and just left behind. You want to be at the top. And be number one type thing. So,
So, in terms of like your playing style, you've come along and obviously having seen you play a fair few times now, you've got a distinctive sort of like carrying game, sort of very aggressive in the loose. How would you describe sort of your sort of super strength or your, I'm going to go and sort of my, use this at work, it's horrible. But what's your USP, Archie?
USP? I'd say probably like you said, my aggression on the side of it. Like I feel like I bring that edge to my game. Obviously for a hooker, especially being at Tigers, your set piece, your line out is always something that's got to be at the forefront of that. And they're still for me, they're big work on to me because I want to be the best at that. But then on the other side, I don't just want to be a. Obviously the aggression's good because I know I've got that, but I want to be dynamic as well. So I'm not necessarily the biggest hooker, like Julian's a big boy, Charlie's a pretty big lad. So I want to be dynamic as well. And I don't feel I'm slow. I feel like I'm pretty quick. So I think for me, it's just, but I want to basically be an all-rounder, but I think at the forefront of that, I want to be known as being aggressive, also being able to kind of control that aggression with skill and almost like dynamic player type.
Dual threat sort of thing. As you said, like energy often feeds off aggression and you've always looked really energetic in game. I think what impressed me was thinking your first season when you sort of like had a few games in the Prem Cup, I thought your ball carrying was, you know, the standout. And actually, I thought this season, I thought some of the defence you, some of the shots you put in defence were like actually made us all stop and go, fucking hell, it's like watching Tom Young's Mark II again. But, but like, this is where the bad nicknames come in because inadvertently, I was watching that with a mate. And when you hit somebody and he sort of like, you got underneath him and I went, woo, the vein train. So that's where we're at the moment.
That's pretty good, actually. I can't
help it. Yeah. Well, thank you. We're going to work on that, but if it's one of our better ones. I think the other two that have got trash is Tommy Turnover and Gorgeous George, which we're working on for George Martin.
Yeah, Gorgeous George, that's good as well. Yeah.
So let's, I suppose, talk a little bit about, as well, one of the roles that you play. Like you said, you obviously had a midweek game coming into this one, but also you spent a bit of time on loan, haven't you?
Nottingham.
With that, it's obviously it's not kind of like, there you go, you're away for the season a lot of the time. It's kind of like, okay, this week you can go and play for Nottingham. But then we need you back sort of like, obviously, midweek for the Tigers. How difficult is that? Because obviously you've got two sides that I know that obviously there's the affiliation, but there's obviously kind of like different calls and different players. That must be a challenge in itself.
Yeah, it is. Well, when was it? I first went there my second year. I went there for about, I want to say potentially like 6 months, like half a year. And I was actually there for a good stint of time, which was beneficial for my rugby because you kind of want to be, like you said, it's difficult when you're in and you're out type thing. You want to almost just be there all the time so you can learn all the calls and you get in with the lads and Notts have got good lads as well. So that's always easy. But yeah, and then my second year, I was there for a similar stint in and out a bit more. And then this year, I haven't been there yet because obviously I've been at the club. But I know like some of my mates here, obviously they're in and out of each one. And it is difficult, but kind of you know the reason why you're doing it, because you're going on loan, so you need to get better and you want to get better. And also you want to play rugby. And that comes with it, obviously, going away, but then you go away to come back better. And when you're in at the club, if you're in once or twice a week and then you're on loan for the rest, every time you're in at the club, the focus is to get better, things like that. And then eventually, obviously, the stuff you've learned at the club, you go away to your loan club and show it. And like, you've got to prove that you obviously are better than that standard to then come back to the club and go pick me type thing.
I think as well, for someone your age playing in your position, like going down to the Championship, the physicality, I know that there is still another step up to the Premiership, but I think it sort of sets you up moving from age grade into like full-on men's rugby, which obviously is quite a leap. Do you find that sort of like it helps with your physicality, particularly your first stint at Nottingham?
Yeah, it does. I mean, well, when I first went, obviously, like younger lads, like you come through the ACAD and then you go to men's rugby, almost no matter where it is, the physicality is just, it skyrockets. I think you don't expect it. It's like a train of just men, really. Because, well, man strength, as people say, they're all massive. And even though some can't shift, you hit them and they're so dense. You're like, fucking hell, what's this type thing? But
it doesn't change no matter what the level. I think I did went from under 16s and I went to playing for my local third team. And I had this unusual thing of being the quickest guy on the pitch, which I'd never had before, just because I was the only person under sort of 35. And then I got into a ruck and it was like going into a fucking washing machine. It was playing for one of the Leicestershire clubs. And then I got sort of like, welcome to men's rugby, like sort of stamped down my back, which was quite good fun. But no, it takes to getting used to. And so I can imagine at your level, it must be something else. But turning to this season then, I'm going to ask you a little bit about the line-out, because it was wicked for the first three games. Last two, it's there's been obviously a few issues with it, and always at key times, it seems to be, like when you're going opportunities. And we know sort of how much stock we put in our line-out as a platform to attack from, not just the mall itself, obviously, but sort of setting up everything else. But for my uneducated eye, when I look at it, it seems like some of our jumpers and our throws are getting almost like marked out the games. How do you guys like approach sort of like fixing that? And I suppose, I'm not going to tell you how you're going to fix it because I'll give the game away. But what sort of steps do you take to try and remedy it?
Well, obviously kind of in any team, you've got your key men. So you've got your line-out operators and things like that. And then you've also got like Polly, who does like his stuff at 10 type thing. So realistically, the key men are there to kind of find those solutions. For me, although hookers throw a lot of the time, we don't actually have a big like impetus on that, but realistically the right men are in place to try and fix those solutions, and we just leave it down to them really. And obviously we're trying every week to make sure we fix that, and obviously some performances of the line-out hasn't gone our way, and it's difficult but when you're in that situation, there's that much pressure there. Like you've got young lads in other positions like Hendo, things like that, and Chez, and it's, you kind of, you've got to be in it to experience it, like the amount of pressure there. But obviously, I'd say lads are just in the right positions and now make sure they fix it. And we go after every week to try and better ourselves.
I'd just blame the second rows, mate. The second rows will be blaming the hookers straight away. So in terms of like how you approach it, then do you sort of like do a video analysis? Do you sort of like look at each throw where it hasn't gone to plan and say, right, what's gone on here? And then I suppose you take it back to the drawing board and say, how can we stop that happening again?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And then obviously on a Monday we'll review all of them, and obviously well in our spare time, obviously professional players, although potentially we play on a Saturday and we have a day off on the Sunday, but if you want to get a better, you've got to make sure in your spare time you watch the games and you watch your individual clips, and I know everyone here does that, and so then you bring in the knowledge that you've, or the ideas you've got from the weekend and you've learned, and then you bring that in, and obviously we discuss about it on the Monday.
Makes me feel a bit better, although you've got a reason to rewatch the game, having actually played in it. I always do the rewatch just so that I can sound like extra nerdy when I'm talking about it. Even though if I was actually sort of on the terrace on Saturday, it's sort of still have to do a rewatch. I suppose final thing for me would be, Leicester Academy gets a lot of praise, and rightly so, for like, obviously it's had a few quiet years. There were still obviously a few sort of like standouts that had come through, Wellesley being one of them. But, you know, sort of between that sort of Ben Youngs, Coley, Manu sort of era, there was sort of like a sort of bit of a fallow spell, relatively speaking. And now there's the wave of obviously like Freddie, they've got George Martin, and JVP, people like that have come through. And then sort of very quick after that, there's another wave coming through, which is like the likes of yourself, Ilione, and Lewis Chesham as well, who is difficult to miss. How good is it? Yeah. I'm not, the nickname we've tried to put on him hasn't caught on yet, so we're going to leave that. But so how good is it coming through with your mates? And are you sort of in one of these sort of very funny but also very terrible sounding house shares at the moment?
Yeah, actually. Well, first, with obviously coming through your mates, it's class. Like, you grow up with them from a young age. And then, like I say, you play in the Acad. Obviously, when I joined the Acad, the second year was not that year, Freddie, George, JVP, Whitcomb, people like that. And obviously having them there was really good, because the expectations, the standards were there. Obviously, I had coaches like Jamie Taylor, Antti Allen, we had Smithy there, Tom Harrison. So with that, like, it was a big step up from the 16s to 18s, but it was, the lads kind of helped you along the way. And I think everyone was on the same page in what we wanted to do. And I think, like, it's engraved from you from a young age at Leicester. Like, you want to win. You go out there to win every week, and kind of you go out there to batter every team. And I think that's one of the key messages that's always pumped into you at a young age, especially from the homegrown lads.
And the sort of future ABC mantle still holds a little bit of weight, doesn't it?
Yeah. If I managed to get there, that'd be class.
So, house arrangements. Who's are you lucky enough to be living with?
So I'm still in the boarding house with the ACAD house of the younger lads. There's about 11 or 12 of us in there.
Christ,
it's good crack. Sometimes lads get like just on each other's toes. It's good. It's good fun.
Worst house, mate.
Worst housemate.
Oh, because we spoke to
Woody,
Woody, and he's throwing. Yeah. I want to see if your answer matches up with him.
So I know what answer he gave.
Oh, do you? All right. Okay. So if you can't say Coriani, who are you going to go for? Is it him?
Yeah. Probably not. I don't really know. I was going to throw just someone under the bus for the crack, really. we'll go. I don't even know.
There's got to be someone who basically sort of would always kind of like, there are two types, aren't there? There's the one that does no housework whatsoever,
yeah,
and like just leaves kind of like dishes, like gathering mold in the sink. Or you get the other one that does the washing up and then leaves a passive aggressive note, sort of like saying, you could thank me later or something like
we'll
that.
Camille.
Really?
Yeah. Me and Woody aren't actually in their kitchen, but in their kitchen, he's wrote rules on the fridge.
That guy. All right, we'll leave it there. Archie, mate, it's been class talking to you. Thank you very much for joining us on the Rolling Mall.
Yeah, cheers, thank you.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, an old favourite returns in different colours. Not the colours that I particularly like, I'll be completely honest, but we've got the wonderful Bobby Bridge, who has been a lifelong Tigers fan. He spent a lot of time, obviously, covering Tigers what's the media company called?
Reach PLC.
Thank you very much, Reach PLC. And obviously, of late, covered Wasps. Unfortunately, after Wasps' demise, he's now reappeared. It's great to see his face, but he's reappeared in his Northampton Saints stash. Bobby, mate, it's great to see you. Albeit in different colours.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I didn't think I'd be getting this call again to come on a Leicester Tigers centred podcast, but really fantastic to see you guys, and he's still good, doing good work. Not as an avid listener as I used to be, but on the long journeys back and forth to Northampton, I'm still tuning from time to time, so you're still doing good work.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to say, you can't sort of like rock up to your new gig at Northampton Saints with our idiotic voices blaring out your car.
No, I don't think it'll go down too well.
Why don't you tell us a bit because of about that? Because when, obviously, WAS went under, a lot of the focus, quite rightly, is on those immediately affected, the players, the coaching staff, and, you know, catering, everyone associated with the business. But obviously, there are a lot of people who then relied on WAS for their job, and you're right front and centre for that. So can you tell us a little bit about sort of how that happened, and then I suppose how the opportunity at Northampton came about?
Yeah, it wasn't like it was a snap thing that just occurred. Of course, it was. If you remember, it was, you know, the games were postponed because players weren't being paid, etc. And yeah, it all built to a head where I had obviously had quite a few moles on the inside to tell me exactly what was going on the ground level. And look, there was this one side of me that was reporting on it, and it was exciting because I'm a journalist and I was on top of the story. All eyes are on me. And the other side of it was, I was writing the obituary for something I actually loved, you know. And WAS obviously just came into my life at a point in my career when it was kind of going nowhere, and gave me a chance to report on top level rugby. I know not everyone loved the concept, and with them moving north, I probably didn't really at the time. But you know, the amount of times they put you know, big numbers of fans inside my county, in my region, to watch top level rugby was fantastic. And then, yeah, there's so many people who are connected with the club, where it's fans I've become friends with, or players, or, you know, the pitman Pudsey. Wherever I go now in this new gig, I'm seeing people that have played for WAS or supported WASPs, or even like medics, that type of thing. So yeah, it's only now, about a year on, actually, I look back and look, I didn't lose my job off the back of that, but it was one of the final nails in the coffin, really. And it was quite catastrophic because I was sat by myself at home just writing this. I'm thinking, well, this is, I better start thinking about a new job then. And that's when an email dropped regarding voluntary redundancy. And all of a sudden I was thinking, this might be a good opportunity. And look, I went for a job at Rugby World, got down for the last two for the content editor there. Didn't get it, but they gave me a freelance retainer. So I took that. Earlier on, we asked about the PR company. So that was Advent Communications that I worked for 6 months. So I did that alongside the freelance, but that ran out. And towards the end of that, I put a few messages on social media to that effect. You know, I've got a fair few followers, so why not? You know, put it out there, whore myself. And Tim Percival, who's now Steve Borthwick's main media guy.
He was the John.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Do you know what? He was great. He brought me in. We had a couple of conversations in person.
Good bloke.
And really good. And we've always, whenever I've gone to Saints, whether it's reporting on the Tigers or Wasps, I've always had a good welcome from them. I'm not just saying that because I work for them now, but you know, Jack Miller, Liz Tyler as well. They've always been really good with me. And so my first impressions were good, you know, going into the environment. And look, there was a few moving pieces because Tim moved on to join Borthwick with England, ahead of the World Cup. Jack Miller got promoted to the head of comms role, and then I got brought in kind of like on a layer underneath, which kind of brings up to the present day. I started about 3 months ago.
How are you finding, Bobby, obviously going from being a media guy asking questions of the club to now being a club man, you know, having to respond to the media and the outside world?
Yeah, that's still a work on for me, definitely, because I'll be speaking to a player and I'm asking, I have a set list of questions. I definitely write down more questions to ask now on this side of the fence, because I've got to make sure that I've got what I need to write the article for the website. But often when I'm asking the questions, I think, oh, there's the story, but it's not the one that's relevant, you know, for the audience that I'm writing for now.
It's not the message as well that the club want to put over.
Yeah, exactly. And there isn't any, you're not pumped with anything before you go into these things. It's common sense. I'm trusted to ask the right things. And it's largely quite safe writing, safe things that you do. But obviously, I'm still kind of hardwired to the reach days where, you know, I was rocking up to press conferences. I thought, you know, speaking to a player, it's very hard to get something that's, you know, if you think your base stand was 5,000 clicks back in the day, that's a hard thing to get from rugby. So I'm always thinking, oh, God, yeah, that would have been good. That would have been good. And I almost want to kind of like message a journalist. I was like, yeah, this will be good. But, you know, they can find that stuff out for themselves. But no, it's good. You know, and every player that I've dealt with so far, you know, the young core of lads they've got at Saints, they're, yeah, not just good rugby players, but lads like Finn Smith, they're really engaging with the media as well. Like they, you can tell they've been going through the ranks and been trained, you know, to be safe, but to be interesting. And you can be both. And I think they do it well. And that's reflected on, I think, the amount of you know, journalists that want to go there. You know, the press bench for Sunday's games, Exeter, was absolutely packed. And I think they knew that, you know, they'll go home with a few things in their notepads.
You obviously we've mentioned three clubs already in Leicester, Wasps, and Northampton. Was there a difference? I mean, I know obviously sort of Steve Borthwick must have been a hard guy to get sort of anything from.
Yeah, Steve. Well, well, look. Yeah, it was a strange time reporting with Steve, because at the very start, when it was obviously all on Zoom, it was largely me and Adam Whitty, and I let Adam Whitty back first and he would do just such a fantastic job. And you know, we used to, I think, get on quite well. But there was definitely a shift, not just towards me, but I think towards all of the kind of media during his time there. I think everyone picked up on it, didn't they? You know, in terms of like not speaking about injuries. But look, I'm not here to slate him. The guy won the Premiership title, delivered a fantastic day that none of us will ever forget, and he got the England job and got a bronze medal. So, you know, I'm not here to dig that out. But, you know, it came to a head, really. There was, you know, ahead of a Prem semi-final, you know, I asked a question, and he kind of just looked at me in the middle of the press pack and said, depends what headline you're going to write. And I felt like saying the classic journalistic response, I don't write the headlines, but I did. So I couldn't really say that. I write for Leicester Mercury, not the Times on Sunday. Yeah, exactly. And you know, look, there was probably some element there that I found it very hard to write the content for Leicester Tigers that would appease my bosses at Reach. So I'd have to sometimes put a headline on something that might pinch a little bit, but I always stood by them. And I went back through everything I'd written over the last 2 months of that period and asked myself some honest questions. I thought, what was it I did that maybe, and maybe that's why he did it, to make me second guess myself, because I was writing stuff about players that might be leaving. Because if you remember that year, Tigers allowed each player to announce on the social media they were leaving, even Juan Pablo Cicino, but, you know, and each one of those is an opportunity for me to grab on it and alter it to my story before Tigers put it on their website, and that was get me traffic. But there's maybe one or two where I speculated about who might be leaving, and some of it sticks, some of it didn't. It came and went in quite a quick span of time.
There are two things, aren't there, that come out from that. One is you never appreciate sort of the balance that a journalist has got to get between maintaining, particularly a journalist that focuses on one or two specific clubs, between maintaining a really good relationship with the club that you're covering, and also, like you say, as much as we hate to say it, you know, managing to generate interest, and I don't like to use the word clicks, but it is effectively clicks, isn't it? And being able to do that, and you can see how sometimes those two can come to a head. So you can see if there was something that would have wound Steve up, you could sort of see why, you know, they get defensive. But at the same time, I think that, you know, all of us who are listening, you know, obviously Steve, fantastic coach, did wonders with the club. But, you know, nobody's perfect. I think, you know, if he's got his work on, and I think he's fine that with the England job, it's trying to be, you know, trying to be more open, which I think is still very much a work in progress. Let's move on. Elliot, look, I think that you've probably got lots of very good noisy questions for Bobby about how Northampton have started their season.
No, I think one of the whispers that you hear across the grapevine across the summer was that Saints, when they were sort of doing their planning for this season, one of their sort of target areas, or a couple of their target areas, was one, improving their physicality. So tailoring their pre-season around doing a bit of bulk work to sort of get more physical and to not be seen as the soft touch, which maybe they had the reputation of being over the last few years. And then secondly, look at their defensive work. Because obviously, I think they had the record over the last two seasons of being the top try conceders, which isn't a particularly good list to be on top of. Obviously, Lee Radford's coming from Castleford as part of that. In terms of how the club, against those two sort of targets, how do you think they've got on so far in terms of, you know, in the first few games of both the Prem season and the Prem Cup that preceded it?
Well, certainly on your first point, in terms of physicality, that's something they've not hidden away from. They've been very open about that. I've heard that referenced in many, many press conferences so far, speaking to George Hendy, kind of rangy fullback/winger, and he put on 4 or 5, 6 kilograms during the summer, and that goes for most of them. And I think anybody who saw the semi-final against Saracens, while there were some real hinge points in that game in terms of perhaps some refereeing decisions, there's no doubt once Saracens got purring, you felt that there was only going to be one winner physically. And that, and ultimately, you know, we've just seen the World Cup, how that was decided. You know, big, strong, hard-carrying rugby players tend to win the big competitions now. And look, I think, yeah, certainly the effort they put into there that was huge during the summer. That kind of predated when I joined, and unfortunately I didn't join them. I'm still short and fat, but certainly from what I've seen, you know, I think what was quite interesting, while the focus might now fall on the victories, the defeat away at Sale wasn't they weren't far away at all in that game. And this is before they had, I know obviously Sale have players away too, but you know, before Courtney Laws, Lewis Ludlam, those kind of boys came back, they really, really kind of took it to them, really. Just a couple of key moments, like efficiency in the 22. And yeah, you know, look, again, like Lee Radford's coming from rugby league, and there's a pretty strong precedent for that working, hey boys. And yeah, he seems like he's hit the ground running. He's a big and compromising guy to look at, that's for sure. And he talks code as well. He's bang up for that. And look, it all came to a fore at the weekends, you know, against Exeter Chiefs. You know, I was there at Cinch Stadium at Franklin's Gardens, and it was, you know, a hell of a performance. You know, we've all seen what Exeter have done over the start of the season. Not away from home, though. What a stinking record they've got away from home. I didn't realise it was so bad. Ten games, I think.
Yeah, but their physicality seems to be chalk and cheese, whether they're at, because they've got such a young side. And we've said on the podcast last week, didn't we, Elliot? We were talking about Rob Back. We were tipping Exeter to struggle this year, at least for this one season, while they get these inexperienced guys up to pace. But they look physically ready already when they're playing at Sandy Park.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, I think with the ball, they're still pretty forceful. Look, when they got into the 22, I mean, their three tries are all from the kind of close range pickups. However, where obviously I didn't watch Saints intently last season, but from what I hear and what I'm hearing is that, yeah, obviously, from what I'm seeing in my own eyes, their role in all defence was very strong at the weekend. That didn't feel like a weapon from Exeter, which feels strange to say, but they still did rumble over, you know, three times. One of them was when the game was kind of dead and buried, really. So, yeah, look, he's definitely there with the physicality. And some of the recruits, like Curtis Langdon as well, you know, he's absolute granite. You know, he'd
improve. Wicked for Montpellier last season. I think he had quite an injury plague time, but when he got on the pitch, he looked wicked.
Yeah, and I think he's got a bit of a point to prove, isn't he? You know, he's making up for lost time. I think he'd love to get back in there with England. You know, how frustrating it must be for an English hooker to look at that World Cup and you see just basically one guy running a lot and no one else being really trusted. You know, he's a senior guy. And yeah, he was a solid piece of recruitment. It didn't take me to say that now. I think everybody can point that out. But he's hit the ground running. It's just square peg and a square hole. Perfect for Northampton Saints. And obviously, you've got that tranche of younger players that are just getting a little bit older and mature. Finn Smith, you know, he's a, you know, a tough tackling fly half as well. He does all the neat stuff as well. But crikey, does he put his head in where it hurts? I mean, I don't know if you saw the red card as well. he took a boot to the face, and he's still kicking goals on the touchline.
I think I'd be interested to know as well, I suppose, two sort of sub-points for that. One, in terms of returning players, like we've talked about. I mean, they've potentially got a formidable back row, haven't they, in Laws, Ludlam and Pearson. I know Pearson was on the bench. I think Ludlam was in the squad. Firstly, I'll ask, is Ludlam back, or is he sort of like, or is he injured? And my second point is, despite all that physicality, I still look at that lineup and I still think, how's their scrum? And particularly against Tigers. No, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, on the Lewis Ludlam, I think Phil Dowson was pretty clear about that. It was a week off from the World Cup. So he came back and played immediately, then had a week off. So I don't know. I'm not seeing the team or anything like that. I've not been into the office today. So I wouldn't tell you anyway.
Why we had you on.
But, you know, look, you know, capturing the club, Leicester Tigers away, you know, I think it would take a lot to keep them away, wouldn't it? But in terms of the scrum, you know, from what I witness is that it can kind of go either way. You know, there's a couple of moments on Sunday where there was a kind of an early knee to the floor, which is obviously the thing in vogue ever since, unfortunately, Genji did it in the semi-final, that the referee didn't spot. But I've not seen them completely bested over a period of three or four scrums. And they have got now, I'd say, like not say the bomb squad, it's so fucking cliche that, isn't it? It's doing my head, everyone's referencing it, but they have got quality they can bring off the bench. You know, Sam Matavates is coming on, he brings on a tremendous amount of energy, and they've got a lot of experience around that for free as well. So, and again, they've got plenty of weight in the second row. So, I think if Exeter maybe caused them one or two scrum penalties, but they won a few back as well. So it was largely even Stephen there. So, look, you guys know better than me than how target scrum's going this year. Obviously, it's historically strong. How's it going this year?
Terrible. Terrible, Bobby. You can tell them it's terrible. No, it's fair, the scrum has been one of the high points of the season so far, and consistently it's been a bedrock. I mean, Petrus to Blue Plessis come in for us and has started a job, and it's been a consistent weapon all the way through. Dan Palmer's now picked up, and it looks like they're singing off the same hymn sheet in terms of the sort of how they see the scrum is pretty consistent from one coach to the other. So, from the scrum is obviously, at Leicester, is always going to be a bedrock of what the game's about. And under the new coaching regime, it has stayed the same way, which is obviously good to see. I find this Saturday really interesting because for the last two or three years, Leicester have always gone into these sort of derby games the sort of favourite, because they've always gone in with decent form. Saints have actually gone into quite a few of these derby games off the back of two or three defeats. When it always that dynamic is always quite interesting. The dynamic this time round is actually different in terms of Saints go into it three wins in a row, buoyant. Tigers go in after a couple of defeats in a row. It's a bad start from us. How do you think that sort of goes into the sort of, you know, in terms of the sort of vibe around Saturday, how do you think that is? How do you think that's going to affect sort of the club? Because actually, for the first time, Northampton possibly going as favourites, albeit at Welford Road.
Well, look, certainly confidence isn't going to be doing any harm at all, is it? After the weekend, three wins. I think it's the way we built towards it. So the context building up to Exeter was a really horrible, scrappy win away at Newcastle. That was, you know, absolute backs against the wall. All came down to a late turnover from Tom James, scrum half. Then against Bath, they played better rugby, but Bath crept back into the game somehow. Sam Graham got over a turnover last minute, 5 minutes on the goal line. So, and then Sunday came the release. This actually getting over the line with some comfort. When you see that 15-point margin, you kind of go, you know, here we go. Surely they can't blow this. And that's the one thing I'm hearing again, and is that propensity to kind of blow leads probably, hopefully, is not really its head yet, and it won't do moving forward. So look, I'm sure going into the derby, the message is going to be form doesn't matter, it's a derby. But look, now Saints are in a position where how do you change that team from the weekends that did so well against Exeter Chiefs, yet you've got Lewis Ludlam coming back into it. I'm sure George Furbank is going to be knocking on the door as well. As you mentioned, Pearson as well, you know, screaming to get back onto that back row. So it's a nice melting pot of players I think the 23 they'll name for Saturday, surely it's got to be the strongest of the season, because it's the best available pool of players that they've had. The injuries have just started to abate a little bit as well at the start of the season when they were without the internationals. It was pretty tough. And then, you know, obviously the Saints won at Mattioli Woods Welford Road last season, didn't they? So there's a bit of confidence that could be taken.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Cheers, Bobby. Good for you to mention that.
Well, I wasn't cheering about it. I wasn't cheering about it last year, was I?
I think it's going to be a really, really interesting game. But I think Elliot sums it up quite nicely. I think the way Tigers are going to approach this is to say, like, this is almost like cup final mentality, which brought the best out of the team last season. They went on that run of six consecutive wins. They need to start picking up wins pronto. I think last weekend, you know, was perhaps McKellar getting the big boys back. They've had 1 week training, and now, you know, they've got a game under their belt. And in our review, we talked about, you know, actually there was a lot of good stuff there, which, you know, if they tweak it, they could really click and be really, really impressive. And actually, me being the eternal optimist, thinks that actually Northampton is a great team to play, not only because you get naturally up for it because it's the derby, but also because they actually don't have a dissimilar style to Quinn's. And in terms of actually how they look to play, they're very, very mobile in the back row. I think if I'm Tigers, if I'm McKellar, and I'm looking at the guys I need to shut down, it's Ludlam, because I think he's one of the chief guys who gets go forward. I know that across the board that's improved, but he's a bit like Genge, isn't he? You know, he's so nasty and aggressive in contact. And obviously the main guy for me is Alex Mitchell. Everything flows through him. I've criticised his decision-making before, but I watched the Exeter game and he was pretty much flawless. You know, he was seeing both sides of the ruck very, very clearly. He was playing his natural game. And if he gets quick ball, he is absolutely lethal. So I think for Tigers, we're praying Tommy Turnover is fit. If not, I'm hoping that a lesson's been learned from not selecting a natural seven, and I think hopefully we'll pick Ilioni. But I think we want to set a nice old-fashioned man-marking scheme on Alex Mitchell. Someone ragdoll him, hold him down, do all that kind of like annoying bullshit that'll kind of keep him out of the game. Elliot, what are your thoughts on the game? Where do you think Tigers will be A, worried, and B, looking to attack?
I think obviously with Tigers versus Saints, it's always going to be that physical battle up front. Now, Leicester obviously traditionally target it because they think it's an area of strength to get over Saints. Obviously, Saints have done their work so now to combat that. So it's always going to be won and lost up front because of that's how where most rugby games are seen. But also, it's going to come down to how much accuracy Tigers can impart, because obviously they created a lot of good stuff last week against Quins, but their finishing and their ability to be clinical cost them at vital moments. And it's the ability to, can they shut down Saints' attacking game? Because you know, in the same way that Saints and like Quins, you're going to be asked a lot of questions in defence. And it's that you've got to be so resolute in your defensive work and you then got to be clinical because you know you're going to have to snuff it out because it's constantly under attack and you've got to fire some shots of your own. So it is always going to be that eternal battle of between the two. So I am intrigued. I think with all the stuff about Saints have been said about their physicality, I think this is probably the biggest test of their physicality work of the season so far. I know they had Sale first up, but obviously it wasn't a true Sale side. This will be a true Leicester side. It's going to be the true Leicester pack at Welford Road with 25,000 people egging them on. This is about as big a test of that physicality work as it's going to be. So I'm intrigued really to see, and I think Saints probably amongst themselves are probably having that conversation of actually look where how are we progressed in this. So I think it's going to be a fascinating game.
Bobby, any sort of changes to the lineup that you see? I know you touched on before that we'll try and keep them at a minimum, but do you think Pearson comes in for Scott Young? I'm assuming Ludlam comes in for Graham, who, by the way, I thought Graham was very good as well at the weekend.
The only thing with Sammy G, is he suffered a head. he suffered a pretty nasty head injury towards the end. So, I mean, honestly, I'm doing this, I've no intel because I've not been in today. So, and as I say, you know, Neil, I wouldn't tell you anything. But I'd be surprised, you know, given the modern head protocols, etc. I'd be very surprised if he's in there. But look, you know, you'd suspect that Lewis Ludlam would come in just through sheer common sense. And look, when George Furbank's normally fit, he normally finds his way back in. And you know, he's the kind of guy you want in these kind of battles. Having said that, though, so, you know, when you watch a team week in, week out, as I do with Saints now and did with Tigers and Wasps, you get drawn to players that aren't necessarily the stars. I remember when I was at covering Tigers, Harry Wells is always the one. I'm like, does this guy ever have a bad game? I just really drew to him. I thought, what a warrior. And at the moment, Saints, you know, people don't necessarily talk about it, but in Coles and Moon in the second row, in terms of like non-international second row pairings, you know, that has got to be right up there. And you've got Chunyamunya as well, who's come from London Irish, and he's just, you know, hit the ground with an absolute monster. You're perhaps not getting the headlines or anything, but he will. You know, that between those three, they've got a real, you know, strong combination there. But you know, it's there's quite a few, you know, selection questions that are out there, because you forget the Premier number 8, Joano Augustus, is unfortunately injured with his bicep injury. But yeah, some tough dilemmas there, I think, for Mr. Dowson this week.
Elliot, what are you going for in the Tigers lineup?
I think it'd be interesting to see what changes do come in, because obviously you've got a couple of questions about likes of Montoya, Martin, Tommy missed last weekend with a head knock, so there are still returning players to come back in. I suspect they will try and minimise the level of disruption. They'll try and bring people in if they can, in terms of those sort of internationals, to get a full complement out there. But they'll try and keep as many partnerships together as possible to keep building that relationship. I can imagine Mikel is reluctant to throw it all around and put another load of changes in to keep it to a minimum level if he can. I would probably have a pretty similar back line. I think Pollard and Young's at 9 and 10 is inked in. I think Catter and Kelly can stay the same. And we'll get, you know, we spoke about it on the, after the Quinns game, is that actually on second viewing, Kelly's performance wasn't that bad. The back three is interesting. I would probably go, for me, Brown at 15, keep Freddie on the wing, bring Ollie Hassel-Collins back on the left wing. And then up front, I think it's just a case of who's of those sort of like, you know, Montoya and Martin. If they are fit, I suspect they'll come back in. Because otherwise, those the pack that played against Quinns.
Who does Martin come in for, though?
For me, I would possibly keep Martin on the bench and
I agree.
Have Chesham start and have Martin for a half an hour sort of anger session. And I've considering he's coming back from injury, I'd do it that way round. So I'd possibly keep Van Vaight.
If he was fully fit, I think I might bring him in for Chesham, dare I say.
Yeah,
I'd bring in Martin for Pollard if I were you. That's the
Hey, mate, you're always the wrong guy. I love a crash ball fly half. So I think we agree. If he got Van Vaight, then we go Montoya. I'd probably start with Cole even if Hazy's fit, purely because I really like Hazy off the bench, get a full 30 minutes from him. It's not saying he shouldn't start because I think he's been one of our best players season. Second row, probably stay Chesham Henderson with Martin on the bench. Back row, Hanro, Jasper and Tommy. Halfbacks, Lenny and Polly. Centres, Catter and Kelly. And I think the back three, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on here, Elliot. I think Mike Brown's been really good, really, really good. But I think, you know, he's got his ceiling. And part of that is obviously because he's getting on a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if Shilcock is fit. See him play 15, help us manage that territory game a little bit because he's got a phenomenal left boot as well. Good left-footed option to have. I know Mike Brown is, but I think Shilcott's got the better kicking game out of the two. A second pair of eyes as well out the back is always helpful. Stewart on the one wing and House Collins on the other, or Stewart back in his favoured role of fullback with Bassett and House Collins on the wing. So it'll be interesting. I would be disappointed to go with Mike Brown because I think he's been excellent.
Is Guy Porter not fit?
He is. However, I think we've been sorely lacking the ball carrying thrust, and he is a very, very classy player, and Catter is obviously there, and I think, as we mentioned on our review of the game, Kelly is actually integral to how we play. His sort of one out passes, his distribution is really, really important. I think obviously he's got that where perhaps Porter doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right, fair gents, fun. Let's wrap this up. Let's do some predictions. Bobby, let's go to you.
Score draw.
bottom end, excellent. Elliot, where are you going?
No, that's not my prediction. I think Saints will win it, and I think it will be within a losing bonus point territory.
Got to give us something. He's not fully turned to the dark side yet. Elliot, what do you reckon, mate?
I think it'll be an entertaining game. I think this could be a game of the weekend. I think it is the bigger derby of all of them that's been done. But I do think that this has all the attributes to be a proper ding-dong game and a real game of the weekend. I think Tigers will edge it. I think there's the home advantage is a big thing. And I think the hurt and the anger of
the
last
desperation.
I think all of those attributes just are a cocktail which comes together that gets Tigers over the line. I think Tigers will win because they have to win. And as we saw last year, when they get into that mindset of, we're winning because we have to win, because it's game over if we don't, can be a very powerful tool. And I think if Montoya is in the side, he almost he personifies that you will not pass attitude. So I think Tigers will edge it. I think it would be a nervy game. I think with 5-10 minutes to go, all three results are in play, but I think Tigers will edge it by three.
Okay. I, being the massive optimist, I think we'll click. I think that Saints will... It will go back and forth, but I think that we'll run in a couple of tries. I think it's going to be Tigers by 7. That's where I think I'm going. Right, nice. Before we go, we can't possibly leave it without extending you, Bobby, our congratulations, A, on the new gig, but B, more importantly, on your incoming arrival, baby number 2. Very, very exciting news.
Yep, thank you very much. Yep, due on November 23rd, so dangerously close to a certain Robbie Mountain's happening soon.
Yeah, again, as I mentioned before we hit record, I'd love to tell you it's easy. It ain't. I thought that man marking, everything would be fine. I thought the issues would come when you go to zonal, i.e. when you have three. We all know the issues with zonal marking. Nobody likes it. But unfortunately, I was proven terribly wrong. But you're going to have your hands full, but it'll be worth it. But massive congratulations to you and your partner. And it's always a pleasure having you on as well.
Thank you, boys. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this week's pod. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much to Bobby. Thank you very much to Archie. Thank you very much to you, Elliot, as always.
Thank you to you, Mike.
Oh, well, this is all very nice. And thank you to all of you guys listening at home. Hope you very much enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. I'm going to give a quick shout out to my old man because I'm going to see Greta Van Fleet with him. I just realised it's the second gig in the space of a week that I'm going to. I'm going to see Greta Van Fleet at Wembley Arena, not stadium, Wembley Arena. Greta Van Fleet is not Greta Thunberg. Greta Van Fleet is an American rock band that sound or got criticised for sounding a lot like Led Zeppelin. Imagine being like criticised for sounding too much like Led Zeppelin. It's like the way you play rugby, it's just a bit too much like Dan Carter. Oh no.
Yeah, I mean, as criticisms go, it's not, it's one of the weirder ones you're going to get.
Yeah, the first album, they might have had a point. Second and third is a clear progression, and I'll fight anyone who argues otherwise. But anyway, I am very much looking forward to seeing that with my dad. To all of you guys, all of you losers not going to Greta Van Fleet, I hope you have a wicked week, and I will catch up next time.